Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, January 24th, 2016. This is episode 1256. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Texture, the mobile app that lets you access the world's most popular magazines anytime, anywhere, using your phone or tablet. For your free trial, visit texture.com/techguy. And by Epson's new EcoTank printers. With Epson's line of SuperTank all-in-one printers, you can print thousands of documents without running out of ink. EcoTank is loaded and ready to print when you are. Visit Epson.com/EcoTank to find out more. And by Squarespace. Squarespace is the simplest way to create a beautiful website or cover page for your portfolio, business, or online store. Enter the offer code TECHGUY and get 10% off. Squarespace! You should! Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers and the internet. Home theater, digital photography, all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. We're here to talk high tech. And anything that's on your mind. And computers, you know, it's funny because computers nowadays means your smartphone, maybe your watch, maybe your TV set, maybe your car nowadays. Guess maybe a laptop or a tablet. Desktop, nah, maybe not so much. It's an interesting story out of Redmond. Microsoft has really been an interesting company to cover. It was in 2015, and it's kicked off 2016 in a fun fashion. And here we are 3 weeks into 2016, and already controversy surrounding Microsoft. They announced something kind of weird last week, and it took me. We talked a little bit about it last week, and I had to talk to my Microsoft experts, Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, who cover Microsoft for a living. They do our Windows Weekly podcast, and they had to explain. They had to explain it to me. So Microsoft, you know, traditionally there's always been this notion that when you get an operating system, Windows, you know, that it'll be good for, you know, roughly 10 years. And after that, you can't expect a company to continue to support the operating system. So there's an end of life. After 10 years, you know, XP died last April. A couple of years, Vista is probably long gone. I don't know. Nobody has it, so it doesn't matter. Windows 7 has a couple more years. And then they call it end of life, where they just stop supporting it. There's yeah, that's what happens. And so I don't think anybody's surprised by that. You don't expect software to go forever. People will stop supporting. We will run. But Microsoft announced a strange thing last week. They said, we can't promise that Windows 7 will run on new hardware. So if you buy a new Intel processor, Skylake or its successor, Kaby Lake, you'll have to use Windows 10. Sorry. And everybody thought, that is a little strange. Wait a minute. I can't remember anybody saying that for anything. Apple, I guess, in a way, says, well, if you have a new processor, you really need to run the new operating system, I guess. The problem with that is, you know, if you buy a new computer, it comes with a new version of OS X anyway. And people just do that. They just use it. On the Windows side, though, there are a lot of people say, no, after Windows 8, no, I am not going to use Windows 10. I want Windows 7. And Microsoft has had to say to them, well, okay, but not much longer. You will not be able to run Windows 7 on newer processors from Intel. We're not going to make it work. And there was a considerable amount of consternation over this. And I think, rightly so, because I don't think we'd ever heard of that before. Turns out, and I didn't know this, although if you think about it, it kind of makes sense. There's a considerable amount of work that Microsoft has to do on these newer, what they call system-on-a-chip computers, SoCs, not just from Intel, but from AMD and Qualcomm. These SoCs require drivers to be written for them so that they'll work with an operating system. So really what Microsoft's saying, and actually this does make sense, but it's hard to communicate, is we can't continue to write drivers for old operating systems to use with new hardware. We're not gonna. So don't expect you. So now I know a lot of you are very attached, as I guess I am, to Windows 7. And I think some people say, "Oh, this is just a bald-faced move by Microsoft to force people to go to Windows 10." How hard could it be to support Windows 7? Well, it turns out maybe pretty hard. There's a considerable amount of programming that has to go into making Skylake or Kaby Lake, the next version, work with Windows 7. And they said, you know, we're going to phase that out. It's a new kind of end of life. When I heard that, I put Linux on one of my Windows machines. I thought, Linux still works. Those are kind of volunteers are doing that. And they have, you know, they want the older versions to run for a variety of reasons. So I guess they put the effort into it, the elbow grease. Microsoft's a commercial entity. Not financially viable for them. And then there are other problems. This, you know, I was all excited about the Windows Microsoft Surface Book, Microsoft's first laptop. They never made a laptop before. First laptop. Well, my friend Paul Thurrott wrote an article this week. He has, like I do, a Surface Book. He also has a Surface Pro 4. Both systems have had considerable problems working with Skylake. And they don't seem to turn off. They have what Paul calls the hot bag syndrome. It sounds very bad, but merely means you close your laptop. That should put it to sleep, right? You put it in your bag. You pull it out when you get to work, and it's burning hot, like it's been on, like working hard this whole time, and it has. And what Microsoft says, it turns out it's harder to do this power management stuff on Skylake, the new Intel processor, than we thought. It's a challenging computer science problem. They exacerbate it with their Surface Book, because a Surface Book has this very interesting, I think cool, but challenging also, ability to eject its screen. There's a little button on it. And when you press it, the screen detaches. It's got some sort of muscle wire in here that when it's electrified, it contracts, the springs release, and the screen comes off. It also detaches the graphics processing unit, which is in the keyboard. So suddenly, the computer is now running off of just the CPU. And in other words, it's kind of significantly changed the hardware configuration. And apparently that confuses the heck out of Windows 10. And the whole thing, blue screens. Not always, just enough to be really annoying. Microsoft says, we know, we're sorry, but we won't have a fix for a while. Maybe later this month. Which is not really very satisfying to those of us who spent like kind of a premium to get this fancy computer. So a little trouble in Redmond. Little difficulty. Just thought I'd pass this along. I like Windows 10 a lot, and I have and had been recommending it to people since July 29th when it first became available. But now I'm hearing enough of problems with it from people that I'm feeling like maybe I've steered you the wrong way. I'm feeling bad. I also recommended this Surface Book, and now I'm having enough problems with it. I'm thinking, gee, I'm sorry. Maybe it'd be better to get a Lenovo or a Dell. Love the Dell XPS 13 or the XPS 15. Those are nice. I like touch. I just turned on my Surface Book and it's been turning on the camera for the last 5 minutes. It's just sitting there. The camera is used to recognize you with Windows Hello, but it's been doing a lot of this. Just sitting there, turning on the camera. Turn it on. It's a little disappointing. Probably not a good idea to buy the first of anything. And isn't that the case? They always say, don't buy the first of anything. That's probably the case. 8888-ASK-LEAH. If you want to talk high tech, we can talk about that. I'd love to hear your experience with Windows 10. Should I stop recommending it? My latest kind of thing, enthusiasm, is for people not buying, don't buy a computer. Don't buy a full-fledged general-purpose computer. It's more complicated than most people need. Buy a tablet, buy a Chromebook. Really like these Chromebooks. You'd be better off. They do everything you want. If what you want to do is get email, send and receive email, surf the internet, buy things online, do your banking, that kind of stuff. Safer, better, faster, easier to use something that's less general purpose. You don't need to design rocket ships. You probably don't need to buy it. So just a thought. We got some news because of the Oracle lawsuit against Google. Oracle's mad at Google for using Java and Android. Some facts. Google made $22 billion in profit from Android over its lifetime. Nice. Leo, we'll talk more about that in a bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That's damning it with faint praise. Windows 10 isn't bad at all. But is it good?
Introducing it.
Hello, Johnny.
So, you know, I've been listening to you talk about this. I've been listening to Paul.
Look at this thing. It's just not...
Oh, that's what you need.
You've entered an incorrect PIN too many times. I didn't even enter it once.
Oh, man, that is so troubling.
Yeah, because I love this computer.
So here's the thing. When you buy Microsoft operating system, you're buying it for a specific piece of hardware. Are you not? Don't they, like, lock it to your hardware?
No. If you buy the hardware, you are. But people buy Windows.
Right. But so if you install Windows on this machine...
So I have a Windows 7 disk.
Right. And then you rebuild the machine and you install it on...
That's not a problem, because if it ever worked, it will continue to work. But if I get a new processor...
I thought you, like, if you change the hard drive... or the
No, Windows that's different. Drive, this is not the activation. This is like it will break.
Well, if you buy a new computer, you want to take your old Windows 7 and put it on a new computer.
There you go. Can't do that.
But you've never been able to do that, right?
You've always been able to do that. I have a copy of Windows 7 I put on computers all the time because I like Windows 7 until Windows 10 came out.
Okay.
So the issue is they're not going to write drivers anymore for new processors.
Right.
And then now I'm having the turn-on problem, which is I shut it down, and I can't seem to, you know...
It's fully charged. It's been plugged
in. It's been plugged in the whole time. No, it's not a charge thing. I just can't. It's been more flaky lately.
I came in here, and I heard this noise, and I thought it was your bleed speaker. Why is your bleed speaker hissing? And it was this,
the fan?
Yeah.
Yeah, see, that's it. That's the hot bag.
It was just sitting there going...
Sigh. Other manufacturers make Skylake Windows machines that work. See, I can't turn it on now. That's another problem Paul mentioned. It was like $2,500, this thing. This has happened to me a lot lately, too. You just hold it forever and ever. Maybe someday it'll come on. The word from Microsoft is, we're sorry, we're going to put out a firmware fix sometime this year. Paul wrote a really scathing... piece. That's what stimulated this.
What's his name? Or her name?
That's Ozzy. Ozzy the Wonder Dog. I can't turn it on now. Arrgh. This was a very expensive computer. And it, you know, and oh, just turned itself on. I didn't even do anything. And just heard me yell at it. You know, my Tesla's going to be the same today. I'm going to be coming in and saying, I read somebody in the forums, her door wouldn't close. She had to get it towed. not the driver door. Okay, now it's looking for me. It recognized me. I want to share shades. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We all got our shades on here. Kim Schaffer is our phone. Oh, look at you. You got it. You're looking cool. Our phone ranger. Hello, Kim.
Good morning.
Looking very cool with your shades on.
Oh, yeah.
8888 Ask Leo to call Kim, and she will prepare you for your adventure in radio. Who do we have today?
Neil in Phoenix, Arizona is having internet woes.
Whoa. Is that a Keanu Reeves kind of a whoa? Hey, Neil, how are you? Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Whoa. Good morning, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
Well, here's the deal. I have Cox Cable Internet over here in Phoenix, and I have the Ultimate package, which they have been steadily upgrading to, 200 megabits and now 300 megabits
nice.
Per second download speed.
Nice.
To that end, right, great. But great. To that end, I have to upgrade my cable modem. I used to have my own Motorola, and I took their cable modem that I rented to make sure I got the speed. And I thought, great, but I was never getting the full 300 megabits. I got no more than, say, 200 megabit download speed.
Yeah.
So I had a Cox check out here a couple weeks ago, and I pointed out that I had an existing Apple AirPort router mm-hmm. that I could use instead, which had gigabit connectivity, because she pointed out that their Aeris modem did not have gigabit speed. So I connected my AirPort router to the Aeris modem, disabled their Wi-Fi, let the Apple router take over the Wi-Fi.
Good.
So now the Aeris is doing DHCP and the Apple router is in bridge mode. And that seems to got the speed up to where it should be and then some, but it's not consistent. Sometimes I get over 300 megabits and sometimes I get as low as 60. In fact, I had to restart my modem and router before the show to get the speed above 60 and back to where it should be. And I'm not sure why I should have to restart the modem and what I can do to prevent that problem and to keep the speed I'm paying for.
Okay. So a couple of things. First of all, you can, by the way, buy your own cable modem. Cox will tell you some that work with your system. It just has to be DOCSIS 3. That's the latest high-speed technology that they're using. I kind of prefer a cable modem that doesn't have Wi-Fi built in, as you probably do too, it sounds like. I'm not sure that there's an issue with their stuff, though. The AirPort Extreme, there might be. You know, it's funny. I recently took my AirPort Extreme out of service and replaced it with a very nice Asus router that I've been getting much better results with. I was getting a lot of dropping with the AirPort Extreme. I wasn't getting fluctuation in speed, so I'm not sure what that's all about. But you say every time that happens, a reboot of the AirPort will fix it?
Well, reboot of the Aeris.
Oh, the Aeris.
Oh,
okay.
And then I usually thought, well, then usually the process in my mind is, well, if you reboot one, you should reboot the other.
Yeah, but I think for an experiment, let's see who's causing the slowdown. It could just be the cable network, but let's assume it's hardware in your house. Reboot just one, see if it fixes it.
Right. Now, is the bridge mode... I'm sorry.
Bridge mode's fine. Yeah, bridge mode's fine. I really don't like that and a lot of internet service providers do this as a convenience, that they bundle the router in with the cable modem. I'd prefer that there was a cable modem that went to a router. That'd be the better way to do it, separate those out. That's how I do it. And I use a Aeris SB6183. You can buy it on Amazon for under $100. It's as fast as anything that Cox is providing, and it doesn't have a router on it. And then you can use a router, separate them out. But bridge mode should be all right. The other possibility, in fact, there's no reason not to let their modem do the DHCP and continue to use the AirPort Extreme in bridge mode. That's generally how I would do it.
And that's what I'm doing now, by the way.
Oh, that is what you're doing now. So the AirPort Extreme's in bridge mode. Okay.
Exactly.
I think that's the way to do it. I guess if you could completely disable the wireless functions in the modem from Cox and just use it as a cable modem, then you could do it that way and have the AirPort do the DHCP and the routing. How modern of an AirPort Extreme is it? Is it the AC, the latest?
Yes, it's the most current one with the built-in hard drive to detect the Mac.
Yeah,
everything in the house is on Wi-Fi.
It's a time
here because everything is Apple.
Right. It's a time capsule. Yeah. You know, I don't know. It could even be that their speed is inconsistent. So really all you can do is experiment. I don't have a magic fix for you. But I can tell you from my own experience, I've not been too happy with the AirPort Extreme. Used to be the class act in routers for a number of reasons. Security as one of them. Apple at least updates it and supports it, and doesn't support WPS, which is a security flaw, has its own way of doing that. So I think it's a good router. But I have to say, I'm very happy with the Asus AC3200. It's faster, has more bands. It has dual 5 gigahertz as well as a 2.4 gigahertz. Has a lot of features that I felt like the AirPort was missing. It works fine with Macs. You know, any router will work with your Mac. You don't have to buy Apple products all the way through. So what I would do is reboot just the modem, see if that fixes it. If it doesn't, reboot just the router. Usually it's the router that causes these problems. See if that fixes it. If neither do, then it's probably Cox. It's probably the cable company. It's new service. Maybe they're not giving you that you know, consistency. Remember also with a cable modem that you are sharing bandwidth with your neighborhood. If it goes down to 60 megabits at 7 p.m. every night, that's because everybody in the neighborhood's been watching Netflix. And that's a known side effect on the way cable modems work. The only fix for that is for the cable company to provide sufficient bandwidth for everybody in the neighborhood at the head end. So you don't see that because it is a shared pool. So that's really an implementation issue. Camden is next in Indiana. Hi, Camden. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Camden. Let's see. I've pushed all the buttons. I tell you what. I think
Hello?
Oh, there he is. Hi, Camden.
Hi, I have a Dell XPS laptop, and the Wi-Fi isn't working.
Oh, my. You know, that is the problem I've had on my Dell XPS. What operating system are you using?
Windows 7.
Okay. I just make sure you have the right driver, update the driver from the Dell folks. The Wi-Fi on the Dell, in fact, on most computers nowadays, is not a separate daughter board or daughter card. It's certainly not on laptops. It's on the motherboard. So the motherboard drivers, just see, make sure you have the latest. But I've seen that happen with my Windows 10 machine. I had to reboot to get the Wi-Fi would come out my XPS 13. By the way, using it in Linux with the Broadcom driver from Mint, Linux Mint, no problem. Never goes down. So it could be a Windows compatibility issue. But I would suggest getting go to Dell, make sure you have the latest drivers for that XPS. Nice. It's a nice laptop. 8888 Ask Leo. Johnny Jett, I think, is going to join us from somewhere cold when we come back. I should mention Texture right now. This would be a good time to do an ad for Texture, because Texture is a great way, and this is actually something a tablet does better than an e-ink reader. It's a great way to get all your favorite magazines on your tablet, your Android or iOS tablet. It's kind of like, I would liken it to Netflix for magazines. So you pay one flat rate, and you get, you know, all the magazines you want to read right there on your tablet. And I really love it. It's formerly known as Next Issue. You might have heard us do ads for Next Issue. This is the same product. In fact, you can go right there and see their catalog and the variety of magazines they have in every category. If you like cooking, they've got Bon Appetit. Actually, for me, it's a great source because I've been trying to cook healthily. Great source. There's Eating Well, Saveur, Vegetarian, Cooking Light, All Recipes, Better Homes. I mean, you're a geek, you want some science and tech, they've got Macworld, PC World, Popular Science, Popular Mechanics, National Geographic, Popular Photography. You know, we used to have a grandparent that would give National Geographic. In fact, when I was a kid, my grandma used to give me National Geographic every year. Now you could give a subscription to Next Issue, and you'd have all of the magazines. See, it seems to me like there's always in any given magazine, like every month there's like a couple of articles in Wired I want to read. Then there might be an article in Vanity Fair or Esquire I want to read. The problem is I don't want to subscribe to 10 different magazines so I can read 10 different articles. And it's really expensive to go to the newsstand and pick up a magazine. So I am really thrilled by this. What a great upgrade for your iPad or your new tablet. So here's the deal. We have got a 30-day free trial of Texture right now. When you go to texture.com/techguy, texture.com/techguy. By the way, this is the full magazine, full access, including back issues, and of course the issue on the newsstand right now. Everything that's in the magazine is there, plus additional material like video that you can't put in a magazine. So declutter your coffee table. Eliminate all that paper in your recycling. Save a tree and get more magazines for less money with Texture. They also have an editorial team that recommends daily stories, a curated collections list that lets you dive into topics. I just think it's a great idea. For your free trial, visit texture.com/tech guy. Texture.com/tech guy. I can't believe I forgot my salad. This is not working out. I got 6 mason jars, quart mason jars.
Oh, you made them yourself?
I made my own shakers.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
And you can put whatever you want in them?
Well, yeah. So I wanted to show you because they're great. So the salad dressing, a third of a cup too much. I'm going to put less, quarter of a cup next time for a quart. And then you want to put a layer of something that can sit in the salad dressing and will be a barrier to the lettuce up top. So chopped tomatoes, chopped peppers, garbanzo beans, just a layer. Don't want too many. A little quinoa. I've been loving the quinoa lately. A little quinoa. Because I found that one of the things I like about the shakers is they have some carbs in there.
Yes.
And that kind of makes it a little bit of a fuller meal, right? But not too much, but a little bit. Some nuts. And then I got one that had broccoli and cabbage and lettuce, different salad mixes. Put those on top. They're good. It's so good. Maybe little walnuts. And then it just sits there in the fridge and it lasts a week.
Yeah, I didn't believe it. I've seen them all over the internet.
It's the hottest thing.
I don't know how they stay fresh, but I guess they do.
Well, that's why. I mean, the only thing in this dressing is like the stuff that could pickle.
Right.
If you go to Pinterest and you search for mason jar salads, apparently it's a big Pinterest category.
It is.
That's how you know about it, isn't it?
Well, you know, I'm not on Pinterest.
Johnny Jet.
Probably the one thing I'm not on.
Look at it, he's there. He's in a cubicle.
Does he shake?
Are you in prison?
Does he make shakes?
Seems like it.
Yeah. Look at this. So I know you went somewhere cold.
My wife's on Pinterest, by the way.
I know. She's a big Pinterest, like, she's
100,000 followers.
Maven. What's her handle on Pinterest?
Natalie Discala. D-I-S-C-A-L-A.
Like her name.
I don't know. Yeah, it's all, it's one pretty word. Girly, but it's girls love it.
She is a great photographer. She does just, this beautiful
life. She just
life.
Picked it up. She's actually at a photography class right now at this convention that I'm at.
What she does, which I love, like this, like, she does these still lifes that I really like. Actually, these are things she's pinned, not her own pictures. But if you follow her on Instagram, she does these really cute still lifes. And she sat next to...
Did you see that?
Yes. Brogan. What was his name?
Billy
Crogan.
Corgan.
Billy Corgan from the Smashing Stumpkins.
Smashing Pumpkins. So it's funny because I'm here in Chicago to talk about how to travel like a rock star.
Why did you go to Chicago in January?
Hey, man, they're paying me to get in, come in here, speak.
I guess so. They had to pay you.
And wow. We got upgraded. She's sitting next to him. I'm across the aisle.
I saw that. Looks pretty sweet.
It was a nice guy. And
what airline was that?
It was American.
Nice.
But the funny part is that someone came up to me in the middle of the flight, said, "Are you Johnny Jet?" And he looked at me like, I'm like, I have no idea.
I usually get that, says Corgan. He had a hoodie on. Shocked. He was like sitting like this. Nobody recognized me. And then you get the star treatment. Yeah.
That doesn't happen often.
You're Johnny Jet. Yeah, I'm Johnny Jet. What of it?
I'm sure it was because of you.
Well, thank you for, I know this was a little bit of a, but it worked out. It's okay. You're not missing anything.
Yeah. I'm going on in an hour. I'm at the Chicago. Perfect. I'm at a convention center right now, about to speak in front of 1,000 people.
Johnny, you're such a super. You're such a superstar.
Well, let's see how many people show up. It's, you know, football.
You know, it's nice.
Playoffs.
I know, but no, they don't begin for a while. Another hour. Right when
I think
talking.
It starts now. It starts in a half hour.
Right when you start talking.
it's exactly right when I start talking.
But don't worry. Nobody in Chicago is into football. Johnny Jet is here. He is a world traveler. His great newsletter and website are at johnnyjet.com. You can follow him as Johnny Jet on Twitter, on Instagram. And it's well worth doing because you're always going somewhere. I saw you and your wife, Natalie, bundled up with fur hoods. You must be somewhere cold, my friend. Where are you?
I'm in Chicago, about to speak at a travel show, the Travel Adventure Show.
Oh, neat. What are you going to talk about?
Actually, I'm going to talk about how to travel like a rock star. So how to get good fares, how to get upgraded. And we can actually touch upon some of that after I give you an app or a website.
You know what's a hoot? You sat next to Billy Corgan of the Smashing Pumpkins flying out there. You literally were traveling with a rock star.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty fitting.
That's a good way to begin that speech, just in case you want to use that. I know how to travel like a rock star. I did.
here's Billy, my boy Billy.
My boy Billy.
He's a nice guy.
How do you travel like a rock star? You wear a hoodie and you hunker down, so I hope nobody recognizes you. That's how you travel.
That's what he did.
Yeah. So I saw that picture on your Facebook or your Instagram. I can't remember which.
It was my Facebook, yeah. I wrote.
You had a game. You played a game with it. You said, who is this Natalie's sitting next to? And I didn't know. But I do like the Smashing Pumpkins, so that's cool.
Yeah.
So give us a website or an app, whichever you want to start with.
All right. So here's a website. It's called Fairness, Fairness.
Like airfare. All right.
Exactly. Have you heard of this one?
No.
So, you know, there's obviously dozens of flight searches out there. And this is one of the newest players. And what I like about these guys is there's so many people who don't know exactly where they want to go or when. They'll say, I want to go to Asia or I want to go to Europe in June or July.
Yeah.
Here you can just put in where you're departing from, where you want to go. There's a bunch of categories like Asia, Europe, Hawaii, U.S. cities, beach, family, nightlife, outdoors, music, or a museum. And then you put in whatever months you want to go. You can, you can choose. You can even choose this weekend or the next 2 weeks only, or you can choose a specific month or multiple months, and it will give you the best deals. And you can say, oh, you know, I can go to, you know, Paris for, you know, whatever it is, $500, $1,000.
Yeah. Well, it's apparently cheaper to go on the 4th. It's only $962 for me, $1,600 the week before. So they're really, fares do vary, don't they?
Oh, wow. they change every minute, and that's one of the things I'll talk about today.
Yeah.
Is that you got to be flexible, you got to look at different airports, you got to look at the times and just keep checking different sites or set up fare alerts, which we talked about before. There's websites out there that, you know, you can just put in your city pairs, your dates, the price you want to pay, and they'll email you when it drops below that.
This is handy because you can see, for instance, that there's a sweet spot that the prices, of course, are highest tomorrow. Then they go down, and in April, you can go for the least amount, and then they start going back up again. In fact, they get really high as you go farther into the future, which is interesting.
Well, it's going to be peak season. So when you're looking at Europe right now, usually for
Europe. Yeah, but April in Paris, right?
It's a great time to go.
Yeah, that's the cheapest if you book right now, according to this. Fairness, I like this. You need help from a computer because the airlines sure as heck are using computers.
For sure. And if you're thinking about going to Europe in the summer, I would also look at fares towards the end of August, usually around the 15th, 16th. You know, kids are starting to go to school much earlier these days.
Yeah, we're going in September because we want the kids to be nowhere near us.
That's a good time to go. That's one of my favorite months to be in Europe.
Yeah, we're gonna go to the Baltic. We're going to be in St. Petersburg. And that's going to be Paris. We start in Paris. So.
I've done that. It could be chilly in September, but...
You don't know.
If it's sunny, it's spectacular.
I'll bring my hooded parka.
I was blown away by St. Petersburg. I wasn't expecting much, and it looks a lot like Venice, just not as polished. But
I think we have 3 days. It's a cruise, but we get 3 days, which is nice. They're laying over, as they say. So there you go, fairness.com. That's the website. Now, Johnny also always brings us an app, so...
So this app, you know, since the big snowstorm on the East Coast, everyone's asking me about weather apps. So this is the new one I just read about. It's NOAA, which is the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's radar.
Ooh.
So the pro version's $1.99. It's only on iOS. But there is also a free version, but you'll get some ads on there. But weather junkies seem to love this one. Because you can have, has, the radar satellite overlays. It shows, real-time rain, snow, any precipitation, and it can, you can color the cover, cloud cover in high resolution and vivid colors. It's, if you're a weather junkie, you might want to look into downloading this one as well.
What's your favorite weather app?
You know, I use a bunch, so before I travel, I always go to weather.com. It's not even the app. I do look at the app as well, and I always have a 10-day the 10-day forecast, so I know what to pack, because usually I'm not going away for more than 10 days.
Yeah, one time. I mean, I know people love weather, even their local weather, but boy, when you travel, you really do kind of want to know what's it going to be like.
Without a doubt. Yeah. So I always have, wherever I'm going the next cities are always loaded up in my weather, and then I just check it out before I start to pack, which is usually the day before or that morning.
I talked to a meteorologist once, and I asked him, and he said, you know, I said, is there a variation in the quality? He said, because I noticed the forecasts are different. Like, you use Yahoo Weather, and it's a different forecast than Weather Underground. It's a different forecast from Forecast.io, which is a different forecast from NOAA. And he said, yeah, he said, we in the field mock Yahoo Weather.
Who knew? Really?
I love Yahoo. I thought that was beautiful. So there you go. NOAA's going to be good. He said, we all use the information from the government. It's all based on that.
I figure. I also like My Radar, which is only good for the U.S., but it really shows you exactly where the rain is. And this one, I believe it costs money, but I was in Florida a couple of weeks ago, and I saw a huge rainstorm coming, and I was like, should I eat outside or not? And I brought up my radar, and it showed it was just off the coast.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know what? I just sat outside.
That's a good idea.
And it worked.
That is one thing I like about Yahoo Weather. On the Apple Watch, it will tell you it's going to rain in 15 minutes. It literally will tell you that on the watch. Watch will say, hey, it's going to rain in 15 minutes.
That's awesome.
Isn't that nice? It's usually right. Of course, it's not like you couldn't just look up and say, yeah, I think it's going to rain in 15 minutes.
Yeah, but you can make some money on that one. You start betting people.
According to my watch. Johnny Jett's at johnnyjett.com, and he's about to speak on how do you travel. Okay, give us two tips for traveling like a rock star.
All right, well, number one, you know, it's much more difficult these days to get upgraded. You know, in the old days, you could just show up, be nice, bring a box of chocolates, which I still do, by the way. But you got to become a frequent flyer. So
get those points.
You got to stick to one airline.
Yeah.
And get those points. And there's some airlines like Delta will actually give you elite status without even getting on a plane. You just have to spend a lot of money on their credit card. So there's ways to become a frequent flyer without even sitting on a plane.
Yeah.
So you need to get status, because once you get status, and they'll give you free upgrades like I did yesterday when I flew from LA to Chicago. You know, I got upgraded for free.
I used to get status to get free flights, but that doesn't seem to be a very good reason to do it anymore.
But now everyone's getting status, so you really have to get high status. So,
it's true.
You got to fly a lot.
On Virgin America now, they say, and if you have a Virgin America credit card, you can get on. And I keep thinking, I really ought to get anybody can get a Virgin America. I should get a Virgin America credit card. I mean, everybody's got status now. If you don't, you're the last person on the plane, period.
I've been number 80 on the upgrade list before. This is before I didn't have much status, but you could be 80. But anyway, another tip is that sometimes it's actually cheaper to buy a first-class ticket than it is a coach ticket. So always look
at
– yes. And if you go to my website, there's a page on how to get upgraded or how to buy a cheap ticket in Teen Ways, and it has a screenshot. I was flying to South by Southwest last year, and it was actually cheaper to buy a first-class ticket by a couple hundred dollars. So always look at that.
I guess if a seat hasn't sold, they'd rather sell it to you for cheap than have it fly empty. That's amazing.
Also premium economy. I've seen on British Airways, I've seen premium economy, which is usually $1,000 more each way, cheaper than coach. So always look at those options. I know people just look at coach and they don't even bother. But
Johnny Jett, he is a rock star. Even if you don't travel, it's just fun to dream, right, to think about it. JohnnyJett.com. Good luck with your talk.
Thank you.
I'm sure nobody in Chicago will be watching football. you're okay. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. All right, John.
All right, well, thanks for having
me. Break a leg, my friend. Thank you for doing this.
My pleasure.
We like getting you on. And I kind of like getting you on at different times, too, because then new people can hear you and all.
Good. Listen, anytime you want me to get on, I'll get on. They asked me to go on Screensavers again, so I'll
good.
Try and
you
do
were
that.
Great. We had you on yesterday. You were great. You had one of your tips.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
My Google alerts don't show up on that stuff. I don't know why.
Because Google can't search into podcasts, so unless there's a text accompanying it.
Okay.
We put it in the description, usually.
And did Natalie's tip ever make it in, by the way? I know she did.
Yeah.
I don't know if,
yeah, it did. Yeah.
Okay, good, because she was wondering. I was like,
we used it a long time ago.
Okay, good. I'll let her know.
You know what? I'll have the producers send her which one so she can see it.
All right, cool. That was like her real first TV.
No, she was great.
So she was nervous.
No, you would never know it. She was very good.
Okay, good. Okay,
yeah,
good.
And I'm looking at her Pinterest. I'm gonna follow her. I'm gonna follow her.
Are you a pinner now?
I've always been a pinner. I'm a closet pinner.
Hey, what she does? She speaks a lot around the world, by the way, on how to drive traffic with Pinterest.
She's the
people
queen.
Don't realize that if you have a website and you have access to beautiful photography, it will drive traffic. It's you know, Martha Stewart's magazine. It was a number one traffic driver, or is a number one traffic driver. All the big glossy magazines. Usually Pinterest is the number one driver. So, you know, check it out.
And you can tell how big she is because when you search for her, you find all these people who are pinning her.
Oh, cool. Right? Well, yeah. she was a recommended user, so she has over 100,000 followers. So,
yeah.
You know, she makes me look like a
She's pretty impressive. Peak. Yeah. Let me see if I can – I got to find her because I don't know how Pinterest works, but you follow her, right? I could follow her.
At the very top, it
pinners.
Should say –
Oh, I see. If I follow pinners.
It should just
here it
click.
Is. Natalie DeScala. Follow. She has – that's not her. That's some woman named Natalie DeScala.
On the left is her.
That's her. And then on the right, there's some yeah, but that's not her. That's my
cousin.
Oh my gosh, she ought to sue her.
She
oh,
had the name
Travelissima.
First.
All right, nice. Now I'm following her. Look at this.
Cool.
See, yeah, these she. Oh man, you married up, Johnny.
I always recommend
she's
that.
Classy. Me too. Me too. She does these great like still lifes. They're beautiful. She must – this must be – I guess now I understand she's doing them for Pinterest. Like she'll do this. And they're just beautiful. And now I understand. Well, oh, no, that's a pin.
I'm not sure. I don't think that's hers, but
no,
she does
not.
Spend time
–
where
like
she does
that.
She does yeah. spend time making that stuff.
I do. Like, I imagine her in the hotel room. She's got it all laid out in the bed.
Oh, my God. I have photos of her standing on swivel chairs.
Yeah.
I'm like, you're going to break
shooting
your neck.
Straight down. Yeah.
Yes.
No, I can tell because I look at this image and I go, I know what went into that. That's funny. All right. Well, give her my best and have a great time. Are you going to stay in Chicago for a little bit?
We're here for a couple nights, but check out my jacket, by the way. I just got this from Bangkok.
Ooh.
This has a world
the
map.
The tailor? What?
Yep. It has a world map right here. You can pick whatever you want. I got my name, Johnny Jett.
And it costs $29.32.
Now, this one costs a little bit more, but I got this shirt in Bangkok that has airplanes on it. And this was like $10.
Look, he's wearing his travel outfit. You need a travel bolo to really make it.
She says I need a
awesome.
Stylist.
No, you don't. Yeah, she should style you if she needs a stylist. That's her job. You could tell Lisa dresses me. I'm all in red. All right, Johnny. Have a great one.
All right. Bye-bye.
See you. Bye-bye. Johnny Jett. He's the sweetest guy. You know, that's one thing I've really noticed, that people like to succeed like he does on the internet and people like Trey Ratcliffe, you got to be guy like lovable.
Genuine
and lovable and like sweet. I guess they're bad, nasty people, too. But like we were watching that winter thing, that was Casey Neistat, who was snowboarding down the streets of New York City. That was awesome.
I was wondering what that was.
Yeah. It was awesome. Casey's another one of those guys everybody loves because he's just a sweetheart. It's like you're happy for his success. Me, like you go, I'm not so happy for your success. Leo Laporte. The Tech Guy, 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the number, 888-827-5536. You, me, let's talk high tech. What do you say? What do you say? Bob is in Detroit, the Motor City. Hello, Bob. Leo Laporte.
Hey, Leo. I've got a POP3 email account I've been using for years, and I want to switch to IMAP.
Yes, you do.
When I switch those settings, what can I expect to have happen to all the old email I got sitting on my local machine?
Oh, that's a good question. So my suggestion for doing that is not to, I'm guessing it would stay if you just went into the account settings and changed it. Who's the provider? They provide both POP and IMAP?
Yeah, the provider is Concentric.
Yeah. So for complete safety, create a new account. So you know almost all email packages, you can have a second account.
Yeah.
And if you do that, then the old mail in the POP account will just stay there. Then you can rename it to Concentric Old or Concentric POP. For complete safety, that would be the best. That would be guaranteed that you wouldn't lose anything. I'm guessing you wouldn't lose anything by just going into the settings of your current account and just changing it from POP to IMAP. But I can't promise that because remember what IMAP is doing, the difference between POP and IMAP is POP, which is an older standard, the post office protocol standard, you download mail from a server, you clear it off the server and you store it locally. And that was from the days when ISPs didn't want to waste hard drive space on you. But now hard drive space is cheap. So they do something that businesses have done for years, which is they have a server, in this case an IMAP server that is not cleared off, that is everything, is all your email. It's sitting there on your IMAP server. And your local email is really just a clone of it. It looks like it. And when you change something on the server, it changes it locally. The advantage of that is you can have IMAP at work and IMAP at home, IMAP on your tablet, IMAP on your phone. And anything you do on any of those is reflected all across the board. So your sent mail folder contains everything you sent from everything. When you delete and message on one of them, it deletes it everywhere. So that's definitely the way you want to do it, as long as your internet service provider offers it. And they do now, because hard drive space is cheap. And this is really what people want. This is how it works in business if you have a Microsoft Exchange server or a BlackBerry server, that kind of thing. And so it just makes more sense. The thing I'm worried about is if you just switch on IMAP, you have been, I presume, downloading and deleting these mails by downloading them from the POP account. They're not on your IMAP server anymore.
Right.
And I'm afraid that it might clone your IMAP server to your email account and say, oh, this is all gone, and delete it. So to be safe, I would just create a second account. Is that okay? Do you mind doing that?
Yeah, we can do that.
And what email client are you using?
Outlook.
Yeah, the other thing you can do, of course, Outlook supports archiving. So you could take the existing mail and archive it in Outlook, which essentially creates a new PST file. Outlook stores current mail in outlook.pst. If you create an archive, and you go folder by folder, you can do the whole thing. If you create an archive, that makes a separate .pst file that you can back up, store somewhere, and that way you're not going to lose anything, guaranteed. And then you can turn on IMAP without any risk. So that's another option. Back it up before you do this.
Uh-huh. Okay.
That would work. You know, let me know. It's an interesting experiment. I don't have the nerve to do it. But my guess would be, because you've been deleting that mail all along. So if you go to IMAP, it's going to say, well, this mail, that doesn't exist. But, there may be also possible in Outlook to say, do not delete mail, local mail, even if it's been deleted on the server.
Okay.
That's another option. I would just archive it. Then you guarantee you have it. You can even copy it to some other drive and make sure you don't. We'll never get never get eliminated. But I think you're making the right choice. Going with IMAP is the best way to do your email. And it really makes sense nowadays because we have more than one computer. Remember, POP comes from a day when hard drive space was dear. We had one computer, so it made sense. You get online, you download your mail, you read it, deletes it off the ISP's server, so they don't have it anymore. And that's local to you. And, of course, then you had to back up and stuff. That's this one thing that IMAP does. You don't have to worry about that. In fact, if you lose a computer, no big deal. If you accidentally erase the hard drive, no big deal, because everything's stored in the server. You know who really made this popular? Gmail. When Gmail came out almost 10 years ago now, it was the pitch was never delete your email. Keep it all. We'll search it. And it's encouraged people, and I include myself in this, to use email as a kind of a database, a repository of all knowledge. So I can literally search back through 10 years of email and say, who was that guy I met in 2007, and what was his address and phone number? And it'll be in my old email. That's nice. IMAP lets you do that. Gmail is kind of a Google flavor of IMAP. All right. Thanks. Hey, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. It's a good question. Let me know how the experiment comes out. Judy in Porter Beach. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Judy.
Hello there. It's not Porter Beach. It's Porter Ranch.
Oh, Porter Beach. You wish it were the beach.
Yes.
No. Porter Ranch is beautiful. I know. I don't know why I said beach. Hello, Judy.
Hi there. Okay, I will tell you what is going on. I'm a 73-year-old Jewish grandma, and I'm actually watching you on my iMac as we speak.
Hi, Judy.
Hello.
I'm waving at you as we speak.
I'm waving back.
Good.
Okay, I have had my 15-inch MacBook Pro with Retina display since October.
Okay.
For the past 6 weeks, I've been talking to Apple support to a supervisor.
Oh, boy.
We've done screen shares, videos, diagnostics, and they have sent it to engineers to no avail.
And you expect me to help you?
I don't know.
I don't know if I can do something. Give me the symptom.
Okay, the symptom is in my photo library, I can't edit. When I click on a picture to edit, it goes black. Now, they set up a test library under another user.
Yeah.
And it works that way.
Ah.
And they think it's a software problem. And they said, if I get a brand new one and migrate everything from my, you know, my little gizmo thing, that the new one would do the same thing. Have you ever heard of such?
No.
Okay. Well, it's
no. So you're using Apple's Photos program? I'm sure you are.
Yeah.
And you go to edit. And you get black. That, to me, almost certainly, because everybody, I mean, I'm using that program. Others are using that program. It doesn't happen universally. It happens to Judy.
Yes.
Yeah. So that, to me, says it's not the software. It's not the Macintosh. It's not the operating system. It's the photo.
No, but it doesn't matter. If the photos have come from my iPhone, from my iPad, it doesn't matter where the photos come from. It happens to all of them.
Okay, it's not the photo. It's the cache. I got a new plan.
Okay.
Yeah, you just eliminated that theory. So the new plan is to export all your photos from your library. Delete the library into put it anywhere in a folder or whatever. Delete the library and re-import. Have you ever done that? Hang on, because we got to take a break for the news. But I will talk to you off the air. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by Epson. I love my Epson EcoTank printer. We actually, I've had an Epson printer. I mentioned this the other day since the old dot matrix days. Remember the MX-80? And the MX, what was it, the 100? The Y carriage one? I've always been an Epson guy. And Epson inkjets, man, I love them. We got, last year, I think, I got the new Precision Core, which uses this industrial engine that they created, that Epson created for, you know, big businesses. 40 million, the inkjet technology blows me away. 40 million dots a second. Just little, you know, picoliter dots, little teeny weeny dots. It's an amazing effect. So that's kind of like the printhead technology. And then Epson this year, well, 2015, blows it out of the water. They still use the great Precision Core technology, but now they make these eco tanks. So I got my wife the eco tank. She has the ET4550. Now here's what's great about this, so we took it out of the box. It has a tank. It doesn't have cartridges. It has a tank, and it comes with ink bottles, enough ink to print 11,000 black pages or 8,500 color pages, basically 50 ink cartridges worth of ink. So you open the bottles, you pour them in. It was really easy to do. Fill it up. Now, I won't be putting ink into that printer for a couple of years. For a couple of years. That is amazing. Now, yes, it costs a little more up front, but over the life of the printer, massive savings because these bottles are very economical. They also make big and, you know, work group printers for businesses like this one. I love this one. The WFR4640, that'll print 20,000 pages. And that gets refilled with these little bags. Just awesome. I'm very grateful to Epson for kind of reinventing the whole notion of how an inkjet printer works and doing the right thing for customers. This is fabulous. Of course, the Precision Core technology means it's very fast. Just a few seconds, page goes zzz, zzz, zzz. Vivid colors. Laser quality black text. Of course, you get all the. It's a multifunction. You get two-sided printing automatically. Very easy. It just goes zzz, prints zzz, on the other side. A 30-page auto document feeder that actually works. Easy wireless printing from your phone and from your tablet. Just love this. And then the EcoTank, which is a really unbeatable combination of value and convenience. EcoTank gives you the freedom to print without running out of ink. Go to Epson.com/EcoTank to find out more. EPSON.com/EcoTank. Epson, exceed your vision. All right, so we're off the air now.
Okay.
So, but because it's what I told you, but I want to kind of walk you through it. So in Photos, you can select all the photos. You probably should do it with just a few at first, just to see if it works.
Okay.
But take 10 photos.
All right, I'm going to write it down rather than do it.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
Select 10 photos. Uh-huh. And then under the file menu, there's an export.
Oh, yeah, I know. Okay.
Yeah. Export the unmodified original. That's what you want.
Okay.
Because that's the photo that came from the camera, whatever the camera
is. You got
was.
It. Yeah. Yeah.
You put it in a folder.
Mm-hmm.
And now you want to create, this is a little trickier because you got to kind of trick photos to use a new library. So what you're going to do is you're going to take the photos library and you're going to move it somewhere. So there's a, in your pictures folder, there's a file called photos library. And,
oh, hell, you're confusing me, but that's okay.
Well, so your photos are stored in a file on your hard drive.
Yes.
And that file on your hard drive is in the pictures folder.
Yeah.
And it's called Photos Library.
Got it.
What we're going to do is we're going to take that out of the pictures folder and just drag it to the desktop. When you by doing that, you're telling Photos there is no library. It's as if it just started, okay? So you're not throwing them out. That's the most important thing. You still have your photos.
But I'm only doing it with a select.
No. You did the export. This is separate. This is the second step. Step one was to take those 10 and export them.
Okay.
Now what you're going to do is move your photo library away so that this way Photos is going to create a new blank library. That's what we want to do. So you take by taking your photos out of the picture library, when now you launch Photos, they'll say, oh, you don't have a library. You want me to create a new one? You'll say, yeah. And then you import those 10 photos because we want to make sure, well, this will check a lot of things. So we're going to import those 10 photos and then see if you can edit those.
Okay.
I bet you can. And if you can, then that will verify that the photos are okay because you exported the originals. That's important. That the program is okay.
Yeah.
Everything else is okay. And what's happened is, and by the way, doesn't surprise me because Apple has big problems with this program.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
This is
but
the thing.
It doesn't happen on my iMac or my iPhone.
Yeah,
or,
right.
Yeah.
Right. But what's happened is on this computer, this new Retina MacBook, somehow the cache, the index of this Photos database, he stores it in one bit. You'll see that photo library is one big file. On my machine, it's 7 gigabytes. It's giant because it's got all that stuff. It's got the photos, but a lot of other stuff. It's got damaged. It's been damaged. And so you're going to recreate it. Now, you're going to lose any edits that you've done. Is that okay?
Oh, God, well.
Well, it's a choice.
I guess so. I don't know.
It's the choice between that and not being able to edit anymore.
Yeah.
See what happens, and the other thing you might want to look.
Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm looking now at the chat room because they've given me a link that says maybe the cause of it. The problem is. Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
All right. Oh my goodness.
Oh, really?
Maybe really. Oh my goodness. No, I'm just kidding you. Raymond has pointed me to a Apple support community that says iPhoto imports upright photos as black. Are all your photos? I don't think this is the issue because the photos are not black, right? It's only when you press the edit.
No, only when I go to edit them.
Yeah. So I don't think this is actually the issue.
And they told me that if I went to the Apple store, the guys at the Genius Bar wouldn't know. So,
well, if the guy, wait a minute, I've noticed this behavior. I import my pictures from an SD card taken with a Canon. Portrait photos, that means the ones that are, tall, not wide, are black, but they show up as soon as I go to edit. He has the opposite problem.
Okay.
He has the opposite problem, but I think it's a related problem in the sense that I think it's a bug in Photos. And what I'm basically asking you to do is to recreate your photo library.
Okay.
So try it with 10 just to see if it works. If it does, then you're going to – there's more steps. I'm sorry. You're going to move the photo library you put on the desktop back into Pictures folder. When you do that, it'll say, oh, wait a minute. You already have one in there. Is it okay to erase it? And you say, yeah, replace it. Because that's that's the one you made the test one with 10 pictures. If the 10 pictures worked, then we know, all we have to do is export all the photos and create a new library.
But why would, as a test user, when they had me set up another user on it, it works with the other user?
Yes, exactly, because the other user has a new library.
Okay.
The library is specific to you.
Okay, got it.
So that's why they did that. And that proved that the operating system's fine, the software's fine. It's your library that's messed up. Now, why they didn't tell you to do this, there may also be, and they should know this, a command to rebuild your library. This is not unusual on giant files like this, that the index gets corrupt or the cache gets corrupt and stuff stops working properly. And normally, there's a command in a program that will rebuild your library. I don't know of a command, so what I'm telling you to do is do it manually.
Okay.
Let me do a search real quickly for rebuild Apple Photos library and see if there is a command. Yeah, repair your library. Oh. So you can try this. Did they tell you this? It says back up your photo library before you do this. And that the way you do that is to go to the pictures. You'll see that the photos library. And you're going to make a copy of it. Put it on another hard drive or just make a copy into a different folder, okay? That way you're not going to lose anything. I don't want you to lose your photos.
No, nor do I.
Yeah, so make a backup of the photos library folder in your pictures folder, okay?
Okay.
You can back it up by just copying it to the desktop. That's fine if you have enough space. And then what this says, this is the Apple Repair Your Library. I should have looked.
It says, I'll Google that too.
Yeah, why they didn't tell you this. If Photos is open, quit it. Press Option Command and then double click Photos. Open Photos with the Option and the Command key held down.
Option Command held down.
And then you'll get a rebuild your a dialog that says, "You want to rebuild your library? Are you sure?"
Okay, wait, you said Option Command plus what?
No, just Option Command and open Photos. So I'm going to close Photos.
Option Command, okay.
Okay, and then open it. So let's go to my, I'm going to go to my Applications folder. I'm going to find that Photos icon. There it is, Photos, okay. And I'm going to hold down the Option key and the Command key, and I'm going to double click it. And it's going to open, and it's going to say, oh, repairing library. And that's going to take a while, and by the way, it's going to say, you're about to repair the library. Oh, repair it. And it's going to ask me for my password because I have to be an administrator.
Got it. Yeah.
Okay?
That's a miracle. Okay, well,
I hope it works. It's a miracle only if it works. Thanks, Judy.
I have one other question for you.
Okay, hold on. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Talking computers, the internet, smartphones, home theater, digital photography, all that stuff. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. and New Jersey and Canada. I say New Jersey for Mike B. because that's where he lives, and it's snowing. Toll free. If you're outside that area, use Skype. Give us a ring. 8888-ASK-LEO. Now, I walked, during the news break, I talked to Judy some more. Judy's the grandma from Porter Ranch, not Porter Beach. she had problems because every time she tries to edit a photo in Apple's Photos, it's black. She can't edit it. So I told her after fumfering around for a while, I finally found the one trick that Apple, I guess, didn't tell you. Which is you can rebuild your Photos library. It's not unusual when you have a giant, giant file with all your stuff in it. I don't like it when people do that. It's a bad idea with email when Outlook does that and a giant PST file. It's a bad idea with a registry. Windows does that. When this registry, it's a bad idea with Photos. You notice iTunes doesn't do that. iTunes, every song is separate. It's its own little. It's like intact. But when you put everything in a big file, it's not unusual for that file to get damaged in some way and you get weird results. In this case, you want to repair your library. And it turns out, I had to look for it, but Apple has a simple command to do that. So we're going to first back up your library. We're going to copy your Photos library to make a copy of it somewhere on another drive or the same drive, just a different space. That way, if something goes wrong, you can copy it back. You know, sometimes repairing big giant databases deletes everything by accident, and that's not good. We don't want to lose your photos. So make a copy. In fact, anytime Photos or any program starts doing weird things, good idea to back up the data. So you've copied your Photos library out of your Pictures folder. You've copied it, let's say, to your desktop. Now you hold down Command and Option, and you run. You open up Photos, and it will say, oh, you want me to repair your library? You say, yes, please. And it's going to rebuild the indexes and the caches and all that stuff. That should fix it. I'm surprised Apple didn't tell you that right up front. So you said you had another question?
Well, this is kind of an interesting question. As I said, I'm 73.
You were 72 a minute ago.
No, yeah, I know.
Okay.
I thought I was going to be 74.
But,
yes. As I said, I don't have a bucket list because I'm not planning on kicking it.
Right on. Right on.
I would love to spend my 75th birthday up in your studio. How do I arrange for that?
Well, you got to get to Petaluma somehow.
Well, I know that.
So you can drive up to Petaluma and then you knock on the door. And Mario on Saturday and Frederick on Sunday will say, who is it? And you say, it's me. I am a Jewish grandma from Porter Ranch named Judy. And he'll say, oh, yeah, you're on the list. And you come in, you sit down. We got a family there here right now, father and son from Oregon visiting. It's an open studio. You're more than welcome. If you want to make sure that I'm here and that we have a chair set out for you, just email tickets at twit.tv. There's no charge. We'd love having I'm a show off. I like having people in the studio.
Thank you very, very much. And I hope you have a terrific day and solve lots of other problems.
Thank you, Judy.
Many other wonderful things.
And don't wait till you're 75.
All right, I'll come sooner.
Come sooner.
Okay.
Nice to talk to you. Jim in San Clemente, California. Hi, Jim. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Jim.
Hey, what's happening?
Not much. I love your show. I wish you were on every day.
You know what? I am on every day. We just don't put it on the radio every day. I sit in my jammies and do a show every single day.
No, oh, really?
Actually, you'll have a podcast network, so I do shows about all kinds of technology every day but Thursday and Friday. That's my weekend. So, yeah, Twit. Google Twit. Stands for This Week in Tech. Should be called something like Leo Never Stops. He talks all day.
All right, great. Hey, I have a question. Based on your recommendation, I bought a new Surface Pro 4.
I'm so sorry. I apologize. I was wrong. No, it's going to get better. Microsoft's going to push out some firmware fixes. Do you have problems with it?
Well, they've exchanged it on me three times, and this one seems to be working pretty good, but it's got bugs.
I have a Surface Book, which I love, but it has bugs. And Microsoft says, we're sorry. It turned out both the Surface Pro 4 and the Surface Book really are the same computer. The only difference is I have a hard keyboard that's physically attached to the bottom of it. But if I detach the tablet from my Surface Book, it's the same as yours. And the problem is that they have a Skylake processor. This was a brand new Intel processor. And Microsoft apparently, they said, it's a tough computer science problem to do power management with Skylake. I don't know how Lenovo and Dell do it, but Microsoft seems to have more trouble.
Yeah, I don't get any more than like 4 hours of battery life out of it.
Yeah. So I think it's going to get better. They've promised a firmware upgrade.
They've offered to give me my money back.
Yeah.
But, I spent everything I bought, it cost me $3,000.
I'm sorry. That seems like an awful lot of money.
I know, but I wanted the best, and I'll just live with it. So what
it will. I am going to promise you this. Microsoft is going to fix it. This is a flagship product for them. They have to fix it.
I know. I've been a computer since DOS 3.0.
Well, you know, these things happen.
And I love Microsoft, so I'll just bear with it. They'll catch up.
I think the Surface Pro is awesome. I really do. I think my Surface Book is fantastic. You love the screen, right?
Oh, yeah.
The touch. Yeah. Windows 10 really is nice. But I believe these are firmware issues. Microsoft says they're going to have a firmware update this month.
Yeah, well, they fixed some of the bugs.
Right.
My goal is to get the... a 37-inch screen and hook this up.
The Surface Hub you want, or the curved one, the 37-inch.
Yeah.
That's nice. Yeah, that's my goal too. Everything costs, what was it, $3,000? Everything.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
That's because they see us coming, Jim. They know we're on our way.
And I can hardly wait for Li-Fi to get here. That'll be cool.
Li-Fi is an interesting new form of Wi-Fi. Well, it's very different. It probably shouldn't be called or related to Wi-Fi because that implies there's some sort of, radio signal. And I think it's laser. I think it's lasers. But it will be nice. Yeah. I look forward to it. It's light-based communication, not radio frequency, which is what Wi-Fi is. So it does, but it will be very fast. They've in the lab, Li-Fi, L-I-F-I, has achieved 224 gigabits a second.
That's killer.
Unless it rains.
Yeah. Okay, so here's my problem. I got this beautiful computer, and I don't want to ruin it by installing software that's going to come in and put malware.
Right on.
So I want to create a virtual machine, so everything I install gets in the virtual machine.
Clever.
And if I like it, I'll move it to the partition where to my regular install.
Let me recommend something you might want to try.
Okay.
It's called Sandboxy.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of it?
Yeah, but Windows comes with one called Hyper-V.
Yeah, that's a virtual machine. So that's a whole separate environment. Sandboxes, same idea, individual apps, one by one. So when you install a program, instead of having to have a whole virtualized Windows install, each program runs in its own virtualization.
Oh, okay.
So you can so it's perfect for what you want to do, which is, well, I don't know if I trust this program. You run it inside Sandboxy, and if you like it, then you can take it out of the sandbox. It's great. Sandboxie.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. 888-827-5536. Toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. And Naomi is calling from Denver. Hello, Naomi.
Hello, Leo.
You must be the only person in Denver not watching TV right now.
Oh, well, we always wait till the third and fourth quarter when Kubiak finally gives up and lets Manning do what he wants to
do.
And
as a matter of fact, they just scored a touchdown, so.
How about that?
How about them Broncos?
Go Broncos.
I won't say how I know that. I'm not watching TV. What can I do for you?
Oh, you know how I help people. Well, now I'm trying to help my sister, and she lives up in this beautiful, absolutely gorgeous panoramic, the 280-degree panoramic view of mountains and plains and stuff.
And she has no internet, right?
Wasn't the internet supposed to come there? Isn't that why we gave them $1 billion or something
like
that?
Yeah, no, never.
Anyway, I was wondering what I can do to help her. Because I want you to picture this. You have to back the truck out of the garage. Now, not the car, but the truck. And you have to line it up with this rock and this bunny statue that they have.
And that's for her... That's for her cell phone?
The driver's door. You can't do it on the passenger side. You do it on the driver's door. You put one hand up on the door frame of the driver's door, and you can put your cell phone in the hand on your left hand that's on the driver's door, and then you hold your right hand up in the air and see if you can get some
calls,
and then you make your call.
That reminds me, when I was a kid, my dad and I liked to listen to old-time radio. We liked to listen to The Shadow. Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men? But we couldn't get it in the house because the radio station was distant. I think it was probably in New York City. So we would go out and sit in the car because we could get the radio. We would listen to old-time radio in the car. That was a bonding moment. That means she's got a very, very, very weak signal. And, you know how radio is if you can get just in the right spot. Steve Wozniak used, when he was in college, when Woz, the creator of the Apple II computer, one of the founders of Apple, was in college, he had a little TV detuner. He made a little machine he could keep in his pocket with a little knob on it. And he turned the knob, and it would detune the TV. So he'd go in the rec room, and he'd, you know, just in his pocket, he'd turn the knob, and the reception would go out. And the other kids would go, oh, man, and they'd get somebody to go fix the rabbit ears. Remember that?
Yeah.
And Waz said, I would just wait till the guy was in the most bizarre position, like 1 foot in the air, one arm in the air, and then I'd fix it. And then the guy would have to stay there. He couldn't put his arm down. People would go, no, because we put his arm down. Waz turned the knob again. So that's radio. That's what happens with radio. So there are some solutions. Does she have internet?
Internet
access? Does she have internet access? No. Because so for people who have
poor... It's a beautiful panoramic view.
Oh, no. That's what she gets. Yeah, she gets that. That's for people who don't have good cell access. Often the cell companies will give you something called a femto cell, which is basically a personal cell tower. But in order for that to work, it has to connect to the internet.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the phone signal's going.
Yeah, well, they don't even have internet.
But if they don't have internet, well, that's not going to help
cable,
her.
You can't even hardly get cable. But did I mention it has a beautiful view?
Unless she can talk her cell provider into putting a tower nearby. That's what's wrong, is the tower is distant.
Yeah.
Has she tried other companies? Because there are, you know, there's basically four in the United States. And there are a lot of little ones that resell the four.
Copper pipe up with this little
yes,
antenna on.
Yes. They're, okay. Yes.
You can go out and grab the copper pipe.
You know, absolutely. Okay. There is a way to do this, actually. I'm going to tell you another story. Man, I'm full of stories today. A friend of mine ran a little cell phone store here in our small town. Used to sell cell phones. I love this guy because I'd go in there and I'd get information from him. And he moved. And he did a dumb thing. He moved into a new store without checking cell reception. Here's a guy who sells cell phones. He goes in the store. There's no cell reception. You can't sell a cell phone if people can't use their cell phones in your store.
Uh-huh.
So he runs out and he gets a device and it works great. Because it turns out the minute he goes out the door, there is cell reception. So he gets a cell phone repeater. And there are a number of these signal amplifiers that you can just put in the door, or in her case, put it where she's getting a bar or two. It might be on the roof. And then run a little wire down into her house. He used one from a company called Wilson. There, you can find out more about them at wilsonamplifiers.com.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the WeBoost. We boost, and it's exactly what you know she needs. She'll figure out where she's going to get a decent signal, and you know the roof might help. It'll help if she can, you know, get somewhere that the tower is visible.
Mm-hmm.
But she'll know. You know, you position this around, you see the signal, and then you run a wire from this into the house, and then there's a little transmitter in the house. The range, price range round, I'm seeing one as little as $200 and as high as $900. So there's a range.
Okay, that's not as much fun as hanging on the
trolley. Well, I know.
Outside.
I know. But you should. There's a number of companies that do this, and you go by carrier, and they will tell you which one is the best for that particular carrier because there's different frequencies and so forth. And she can decide how much she's willing to spend on this.
All right. I want to tell you about Windows 10.
Yeah? Whoa. That's like I just was talking to Yosemite Sam or something. Wow. Tell me.
that
Windows 10. The environment. What about Windows 10?
Now that I have exercised my demons.
Are you using Windows 10?
I am using Windows 10 on my laptop. I'm thinking about not putting it on my new standalone that I just bought for a super price. But anyway, Windows 10, I have an Asus laptop, and it will not two-finger scroll.
Oh, it's frustrating. And that could be hardware, though. You make sure you've got the driver for the trackpad. It won't, okay.
Yeah. You go over the internet, it's just all over the internet.
Oh, everybody says that, huh?
Every time. And then you get it fixed. And
I could two-finger scroll on my Windows 10. So I wonder, that's a driver issue. And that's what you're going to get with new operating systems. You're going to get hardware mismatches. People have to write. They're in between the operating system and the hardware, in this case the trackpad, there stands a bit of software called a driver. You've heard the word driver. That's what a driver is. It's kind of like a translator. It speaks Windows 10, it speaks trackpad, and it lets the two talk to one another. And that's a very smart way to do it, because you don't want to build in the capability to talk to every possible bit of hardware into the operating system. It'd just balloon out of control. So what you do is you have in the operating system a sensible way of interacting with the operating system, something called an API or an interface. And then you tell people who make hardware, all you have to do is make some software that speaks to this interface and speaks to your hardware, and your hardware will work. So it could be Microsoft's fault, it could be Synaptic's fault, the company that made the trackpad, but that's all you need. You need the right driver. It should work. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, our show today brought to you by Squarespace. I got to tell you about Squarespace. I love Squarespace. It's the place to make your next website. I remember we were talking with Jason Calacanis. He said, you'd be nuts today to go to a web design firm when you got Squarespace doing state-of-the-art templates with all the stuff, best engineering, best designers together, mobile, responsive, e-commerce, everything you want. And it's very affordable. Go to squarespace.com. You can try it right now for free. You can even get your old data from your old site into the new site to take a look at it. And you're going to get a site that looks like your ethos, your style. Even the e-commerce does. No exit to a shopping cart that looks horrible. It's just beautiful. And Squarespace sites never go down. And I love that about it. My Leoville, my blog is on Squarespace, and I just love it. If you want to create an online storefront, if you want to do a blog, if you're a band, a filmmaker, a writer, a musician, Squarespace is the place to make a beautiful design. And if you're a developer, the developer's platform means you can do anything. You can even start with the blank template, you know, their basic template, and customize it completely. Get a custom domain for free with an annual purchase. I love Squarespace. You will love it too. And you cannot bring it down. If everybody listening right now, a million people went to leoville.com, it'd be fine. I wouldn't mind. Well, I actually really appreciate it. Squarespace.com. Actually, go there first. Try it for free. And use my promo code TECHGUY to get 10% off when you purchase. You get a great deal and you'll show your support for the show. Squarespace. You should. I thought I saw Chris Marquardt there. Are you back from... Oh, my God.
Jeez. My new look. Hi, Leo. How are you?
That is good. I want that hat.
That's I don't even know what they call it. You wear it in the desert.
Yes.
In Ethiopia, in the hottest ever inhabited place on Earth.
And it keeps your head cool.
Yeah, open a website. I have pictures to talk
Yay.
About or to TF, show you. TFTTF.com/ET2016pics.
2016PIX.
No, PICS.
Oh!
Almost.
TFTTF.com.
It was a wonderful journey.
ET
it was really beautiful.
2016PICS. I got a Rolex.
You did?
Yeah.
Didn't you show me? Yeah, you did show me before.
Oh, you saw it? Because I got the Leica and the Rolex. I'm out of control. Totally out of control.
Well, my fiance shot 600 analog medium format pictures in Ethiopia.
You know, I like the look Huge. Of Portra. I got a couple of rolls of Kodak Portra 400, and
Portra's
I like
beautiful.
It. It's kind of pretty. But I brought it to the local guy. I thought I should support the local camera store. And they didn't scan it at a very high resolution. So I need to send it to a lab that can scan it.
They have these machines that do the prints and they scan
the whole
it.
Thing.
And
yeah.
But you can tell them to up the resolution.
I told them, give me the highest resolution. It was disappointing. They have a C41 machine, but I think that's all it can do. They sent the black and white. They sent the Tri-X out, and I got a higher res scan on the Tri-X. It looks good. Okay. So tell me this. When I look at the histogram of my images, it's like spiking at the high end and the low end. And it's like a U.
Kind of depends on, well, first of all, where you shot, how the contrast was of the scene, but also how the contrast was set during the scanning.
I wonder if this is scanning. Question.
Though what we call a bathtub histogram means that they cranked it up.
That's what I think.
Really to the extremes.
Yeah.
And doing your own scanning might be a bit more cumbersome, but it will
definitely... I have the negatives. I'm going to try it because I think, it doesn't look right.
You can actually photograph the negatives with a macro lens and a bit of a backlight. You can build a little
contraption. But I have a scanner with a thing. Because they all look a little bit overexposed.
Mm. That's not your fault. That's the bathtub. Most likely the lab's fault.
Yeah, I'm not going to use the local guy anymore. So is this, what is this? Is this quinoa? What is this?
It's the sulfur fields of Dalol.
Oh my God, it's beautiful.
It was the most amazing.
Oh my goodness.
We were there last year. This year it just was out of control.
It's bubbling.
This is the most amazing.
Anywhere there's volcanic activity, we have a place like this in Northern California. They call it like the Devil's Kitchen.
Well, I talked to people who were at that place, and they were kind of blown away how much better this one was.
Really,
completely amazing. Oh, it was really good. So what I want to do today is just go over some of the pictures.
Are beautiful.
Tell a few stories.
There it is again. So it's volcanic activity, right?
It's volcanic activity. It's actually the hottest ever inhabited place on Earth, called Dalol.
Why would you live there? So it's not hot from the sun, it's hot from the volcanic activity?
Well, it's hot from the sun from above, it's in the high 90s, and from below it's hot too, so you get grilled from two sides, basically.
Why? Okay, here we go. He's back from Ethiopia, ladies and gentlemen. He's wearing some sort of odd headgear. Chris Marquardt.
It's what you wear in the desert, because it's hot, and it's hot from above, and you want to protect your neck and your ears, and...
I feel like you look like you should have a camel. There should be a camel with you.
We've seen lots of camels. It was just like one of these trips that are really hard to forget, and the photography was just amazing.
Was this a workshop? Were you leading a photo workshop?
It was a photo tour. Yeah, it was a photo tour.
This is the best reason to travel, because it's one thing to take pictures around you, and you probably should do that, but when you travel, you just get so inspired by the new sights and sounds. And
definitely.
In your case, smells, because I think you went to a sulfur field.
Among many, many other things. I mean, this is one of the most diverse photo tours that I've ever done, and it's probably not the last time I'm going there.
How fun.
So how big was the group? The group was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, five, 6 people in total.
Nice.
So
nice.
It wasn't a huge group. Mm-hmm. We went from the bigger cities like Addis Ababa, which is the capital of Ethiopia, to Harar, the spice markets of Diridawa.
Oh,
we saw the salt diggers at Lake Azale. Oh. Very old culture there. I mean, there's still people manually digging salt out of a dried up salt lake, loading them, cutting them into squares, loading them on the back of camels. The camel caravans are still transporting those. It's like the way they've done it for thousands of years. The narrow alleys of Harar, pretty much no tourism in many of these places.
I like that.
Erta Ale, an active volcano. And of course, the sulfur fields of Dalol. It's one of these places you can't really know what to expect unless you go there, because it changes all the time. This is alive. This is where the earth is alive, and where it builds these little terraces of liquid dripping down with yellow sulfur and blue and greens and browns, and like the colors are just mind-boggling.
You brought your digital camera, I hope.
That's what I did on this trip. Actually brought two digital cameras, my good old 5D Mark II and the SL1, which is the smallest entry-level DSLR. Actually, many of the pictures I shot with the longer focal length, with a telephoto lens, were shot with the SL1, because what the 18 megapixels it outputs during daylight are just as good as the bigger cameras. Uh-huh. And it's a lightweight camera, so it's really good. Like, it's good for a secondary camera body, and you don't have to switch lenses in a desert environment, which helps.
Beautiful stuff.
We were there at the exact right moment. That's one of the...
I'm going to tell people a website. If you're in your car, you're stuck. But if you're at home or you want to make a note, and we'll put this in the show notes at techguylabs.com. Chris has posted some lovely pictures at his website, TTF. That stands for Tips for the Top Floor, if you want to remember. TFTTF.com/ET2016PICS. ET2016 PICS. And these are really stunning images. So this SL1 is intriguing to me. So you think it's a pretty good camera?
Well, I wouldn't use it in low light. Low light above ISO 800, it's kind of
okay. But outside, plenty of light here.
Oh, for this kind of a purpose, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. That camera, it might not be as super rugged as some of the bigger, more expensive models, but for a secondary camera, I was always at the point of deciding: do I want to go and add a mirrorless system to what I use? But then I have all these lenses I've invested in. I just couldn't really get to the point to invest in like a second system and then have two systems in parallel and carry two sets of lenses and things. So I was trying to stay within the brand that I use, and the SL1 ended up being a very good choice, very good augmentation of the system. I can still use the same lenses and
beautiful images. It is often the case when you travel that you make compromises because you don't want to be burdened with tons of lenses and camera bodies, and you kind of want something light and simple, and yet you need a range of capabilities. I just got what sometimes people call a travel lens for my my little Sony A7. It's 10x zoom. It goes from 24 to 240, and you make a compromise with a massive zoom like that because the crispness on the edges is a little lower and maybe not as beautifully optical. But with one lens and one camera, a fairly light package, you can shoot pretty much anything.
And especially if you're not a professional photographer who are kind of used to have like a big backpack of full of camera gear in the back, but a travel zoom that covers a pretty wide range. Certainly,
it's nice
a good
to
choice.
Have. Yeah, I in the past said no, but it really does. You know, it's really nice. These are gorgeous. By the way, if you haven't gone to the site, when you get home, go look at this site. Great, great pictures. And you are so good, not only at composition and color, but at taking pictures of people. And it's a nice mix of both your portraits.
Ethiopia has this wide variety of things you can photograph. Yeah. I mean, they're the people, the culture, the landscapes, lots of changing landscapes, not just the desert. There are lots of lush and green hills and
crocodiles, apparently.
Oh, crocodile as well. The Awash National Park has some wildlife. So it's really this mix. We ended the tour in a city called Lalibela, which we did during what's called the Timkat Festival. That's Epiphany. And Ethiopia is a very religious country. So their Timkat Festival goes on for 3 days. People in white robes at night with lit by candles. I mean, just amazing cultural stuff and also amazing imagery. And,
but the color and light in these images is really, really phenomenal.
We made actually we changed our day night rhythm. We actually started getting up for sunrise, and so we had the sunrise and the sunset. There's not much to do at night, so you can go to bed early anyway.
Go to bed early after the sun sets, and you can start over.
And it's very predictable. It's about 10 degrees above the equator, so the day pretty much starts around 6 o'clock and ends around 6 o'clock. Oh, the daylight, nice. So you can count on that. And the sunrise is fairly fast because it's so close to the equator. So sunrise of 5 to 10 minutes, and then the sun, I would say after half an hour, is already quite high in the sky. But that time around sunset, right before sunset and within the first half hour to maybe 45 minutes after sunset, that's when you get the really magic light. And we used that extensively on this trip. I mean, we really made a point of being there when the light was happening. And it turned into just amazing selection of photos. And by the way, some of those during midday, we took some of those in the shade. So we didn't stop during the day. We made a little siesta when the sun was highest. But then we went out pretty quickly again and tried to find spaces that didn't have the direct harsh light that made it a bit easier.
When you go on a trip like this, do you set yourself goals? Do you say, okay, on this trip, I'd like to get pictures of kids, or I want to shoot reds, or do you do something like that?
Luckily, I had the experience of having been there first, so I kind of knew what to expect, and I was definitely making a bigger effort in trying to shoot pictures of people, because I liked the pictures I had of people last time, but yeah. I knew I could extended a bit. I could be a bit better.
Chris Marquardt, you'll find his podcast at Tips from the Top Floor, tfttf.com. And these pictures, we'll put a link. It'll be easiest. We'll just put a link in the show notes at techguylabs.com. Our assignment, do you want to do that next week?
We do that next week. Our assignment is street.
Street. Take a picture, upload it to Flickr. You got one more chance. Street. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. These are gorgeous. These are, you know, this could be your portfolio just by itself.
It's the sulfur fields within 1.5 hours. I had about 200 pictures. That I mean, it was just perfect timing, perfect light, perfect the way it looked. Yeah. I mean, this is just completely mind blowing.
Amazing. This is almost like a photographer's paradise. It looks like, really, with
it,
variety.
It was.
Yeah.
It was this time around. Everything from a photography point of view was just amazing. I mean,
thanks. Thank you, Chris.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, welcome home. And next time, get me one of those hats.
Oh, it's a cloth. Wait, let me show you.
It's just tied up. It's just a tied up cloth.
That's all it is. You have to give it a certain twist.
You have to learn the technique.
Yeah.
We got it. Sometime we should talk about how you do pictures of people. And somebody's asking in the chat room, what do you do? Approach them directly? Do you take the picture first, then talk? How do you do it? And I think that would be a good subject.
Totally depends. But let's do that one of the next few times.
Very nice. Thank you, Chris.
Absolutely. Take care. Bye-bye.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 88 Ask Leo. We go back to the phones to talk about tech. Anthony is next from Lake Elsinore, California. Hi, Anthony.
Hi. I can't afford a new computer, but I need one with better RAM. Is there any tips you can give me to boost the RAM?
Desktop computers, it's easy to add more RAM. Laptops, it really depends on the design of the laptop. Some laptops you can't, some you can. Do you have a computer?
Yeah, I have a laptop.
What kind?
Asus notebook.
So the easiest thing to do would be Google it or go to ifixit.com, which is a site where they have repair manuals for everything, and just see. Some notebooks, there's a little panel on the bottom. You unscrew it, you open it up, and you have a slot, and you have slots. And unless you've maxed it out, there'll be a slot that you can add in what's called an SODIMM, which is just a kind of a small circuit board with memory chips on it, and you can often increase the RAM significantly. There are all sorts of ins and outs. You know, another way to find out, but first of all, you have to find out if you can do it. Secondly, then go to a site like Kingston.com or Crucial.com. These are RAM vendors, and they have RAM pickers because you have to get exactly the right kind of RAM for that model. So you can enter in the model of computer that you have, and it'll pick the RAM that you need to get. The good news is random access memory, RAM memory for computers is pretty cheap these days. And if you have, you know, a computer that only has 1 or 2 gigs of RAM, it's really hard to run modern operating systems in something like that. Adding a couple of gigs can make a big difference. As long as you got it open, you might also look at replacing the hard drive. Putting a solid-state drive in a computer, if you can do it again, can really make a difference in the overall speed. If the computer's not too old, the solid-state drives are so fast that they need a modern connection. We call it the bus, the connection that streams data from the hard drive to this processor. That memory bus has to be fast enough to take advantage of the SSD. But if it is, if it's, you know, SATA 2 or SATA 3, That's another upgrade that's very profitable. It can do very inexpensively and really get great results. Laptops are not the most upgradable ever, so it really depends on the machine. You know, some laptops are just no user serviceable parts inside. Older laptops tend to be a little bit more upgradable, and that's good news. Finally, the one last thing you might want to consider, if you can't get the hardware upgraded, you can often give new life to an old computer by putting Linux on it. This is a free operating system. It's not Mac. It's not Windows. But it can often run better on older hardware than either Mac or Windows and can run better in constrained memory environments. Linux is a little bit geeky, a little harder to use. Although they've made great strides. I've recently started using a version of Linux, what they call a distribution called Linux Mint. And it's really, I would say it's as good as Windows. But it does require some significant resources. So if you have an old, slow, low RAM laptop, there are versions of Linux, versions of Ubuntu, for instance, that will run very well on older hardware. You might find that it gives you great results. The nice thing about Linux is it's secure. If what you do mostly is browse, it's great. It doesn't have Microsoft Office on it, but it's got Chrome and it's got Firefox. It has a free Office, in most cases, LibreOffice, that is probably almost as good. There's a lot you can do with that. So a lot of times taking an old computer and wiping it off and putting Linux on it is a good choice as well. Brett's in New Jersey. Hi, Brett.
Hi, Leo. I have a question. I'm looking for a 28-inch monitor, and I chose a ViewSonic from Amazon, but I want your opinion. It's the VX2858SML.
Yeah, ViewSonic is a name that's been around for an awful long time. It makes very good monitors. Are you happy with it?
Yeah, because I have an old ViewSonic, but I want to upgrade.
You haven't bought it yet?
No.
Ah.
What do you think about this model?
Here's what I would do. I would compare it to a Dell. Believe it or not, Dell has very good prices on big screen monitors. They even have the new curved 31-inch and bigger monitors that are really beautiful.
But do they have ones that are good for watching movies?
Yes.
I want to get good detail. And I want to get HD, too.
Yes. So Dell has on all their monitors a base level and a higher level. You can tell immediately because of the price. But I think they have a very aggressive pricing on very good monitors. I haven't tried a ViewSonic monitor in years. I'm with you. I like that brand name. I have for a long time. But I can't give you a specific recommendation because I haven't used a ViewSonic monitor in so long. But I've been very impressed with those Dell monitors. The company LG that makes TVs makes excellent monitors. Asus makes some very good monitors. I'm using an Asus 5 or 4K monitor that's just spectacular. Very, very nice. So there are these are newer companies that have kind of come up since the days of ViewSonic. You kind of brought me back some memories on there. I don't have anything against them.
I have an Acer monitor, too.
Yeah.
And I just returned it to Amazon.
Oh, okay.
The screen was good, 27-inch, but the problem is, when I used to watch movies, it wasn't good for movies, so I had to return it. So
well, it's true that computer monitors are designed for computers, not so much for watching movies, although nowadays they all have HDMI, which means you can use them as a television screen. And generally, computer monitors are higher resolution. They really are better in some ways than a TV screen. They're just doing something different. Why wasn't it good? What was it that you didn't like about it?
I just didn't like it because I couldn't figure this out because they didn't have good support anyway because they had a very strong accent. But when I used to download the HD wallpapers, the picture was perfect. But when I used to watch a movie, even in HD or my personal DVDs, it just was...
Yeah, well, there is one issue because a DVD, believe it or not, has 480 lines of resolution. You're actually one of the reasons you didn't like how it looked is you were seeing it more clearly than you would on a television set. A DVD, if you're watching a Blu-ray, it should look pretty good. That's 1,080 lines of resolution, but a DVD is only 480 lines of resolution. That means to put it on that nice high res monitor, it had to blow it up, and that's not so good. There's some beautiful monitors. I would look at Dell. I think the Dell monitors should look good for TV. But remember, this is the problem when the first HD TVs came out. People were watching their old TV shows like Andy Griffith and I Love Lucy, and they said, these look terrible. Yeah, that's a lack of upscaling. The upscaling, which takes a lower res picture and makes it look better on a big screen, is missing in computer monitors. They don't generally do upscaling. So if you're playing it back from a computer, you're not getting any upscaling at all. What you're seeing is exactly what's on that disc, which means you're seeing all the defects. So it would look better, for instance, if you used a DVD player that had built-in upscaling and played that on your monitor, or use a higher quality input. Use a Blu-ray disc. It's funny, TV monitors are not as high resolution as computer monitors. The chat room just sent me a link to a Dell 34-inch curved monitor. Beautiful. This is something I would very much like to get. Dell has some nice stuff. I think they have a very good, very aggressive pricing. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, will come back right after this. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, all that jazz. 888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536, toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Back to the phones we go, and Charles is on the line from Oxnard, California. Hello, Charles. I called it Oxnard. It should really be called Oxnard.
Right.
And you might be an Oxnard, however.
Yeah, probably.
What can I do for you?
Well, I bought an SSD drive, 120 gigabytes,
mm-hmm.
and it's great. Even though my motherboard's only got a 3 gigabyte transfer rate, a couple of Chrome, I find it load real fast. But I'm wondering how to transfer my operating system over to it. And I download the operating system. I bought it from DigiRiver, so there's really no CD or anything.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering how to do that without having to, because it's all on the C drive originally.
So, by the way, that's we were just talking about this. That's an example of where an SSD, even if it's not got the fastest interface, can still make a huge difference. There's no random access time. It's just very fast.
Oh, yeah, it's amazing. That, yeah. That part.
So what version of Windows are you using?
Windows 7.
Okay, so the deal is when you bought it, you got a serial number. That's kind of the key. You still have that, I'm sure.
I have to look for it.
There are programs you can run that will drag the serial number out of Microsoft Windows. I think it's stored somewhere in the registry. But if you have the license key, or if you can retrieve the license key, all you need to do is download a copy of Windows 7. You can get it from Digital River. You could probably get it from Microsoft. I think they have what we call ISO files. Yeah, they do, of Windows 7. So I'll put a link in the show notes to the Microsoft page where you can get the ISO.
Oh, okay.
And the reason they make that freely available is without the product key, you can't do anything anyway. You can try it for 30 days, and then it's going to say, I'm sorry, but you don't have an authorized version. The authorization is that product key. Now, the product key is tied to your computer, but if you're just changing a hard drive, that's not going to be an issue. You'd have to change more than the hard drive for it to look like a new computer.
Well, I'm just adding a hard drive. I'm going to leave most of the stuff on the big hard drive.
Yeah, the motherboard. Oh, then this is no problem at all. Yeah. So, you go to Microsoft.com or just Google Windows 7 ISO. Do get it from Microsoft, not some third party. And in fact, they even say, enter the 25-character product key and that came on the box or you got in the confirmation email. That's the other thing you can do is search your email for Digital River and they probably have it there.
Oh.
And enter that product key, and then that's it. You just install it.
Oh, okay. I'll try that. Thank you.
Simple, simple, simple. If you can't somehow determine your product key, as I said, there are programs that will find it. Bell Arc Advisor, somebody in the chat room saying, does that. That's a good little program. It's funny. There's a program. We're talking about old brands like ViewSonic. There's a program that's been around for ages and still very, very useful. It kind of gives you information about the hardware in your computer, what's going on in it. Dan in Jacksonville, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Jacksonville, Illinois. Hi, Dan. Hello, Dan. Dan! Wake up, Dan. All right, I'm going to put him on hold. I am, just so you know, I'm putting Dan on hold. And you can wake him up. Now we're going to go to Jerry in Santa Clarita. Hi, Jerry. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo.
Hey.
I've got a Asus motherboard, and I went into the BIOS and overclocked it with using the AI tweaker, and it got like 4% higher. And then I was messing around, and I went into the I downloaded the software called AI Suite, and I ran the 5-point optimization, and it overclocked it more. So I'm like at 4.9 gigahertz.
Nice.
Yeah, well, I was just wondering if that's, too high. Is there any way I could,
So here's how you'll know if it's too...
Remove the software.
Here's how you'll know if it's too high.
Yeah.
It'll be unreliable. So either you'll get some weird crashes or hangs. If the thing runs reliably at a higher clock speed, you're golden. And this is something called overclocking, and it's funny. We used to do this a lot because the way they make microprocessors, they do something called bin sorting. So Intel will make a chip and then test it, and they'll sort them into different bins for the maximum clock speed that chip can handle. But it doesn't always turn out they need that many chips from that bin. They may need, you know what, we need more slow chips. We're selling a lot of these slower chips, so they'll take a chip from a faster bin and sell it as a slower. The market is a slower chip. Turns out it can be run faster, because that's really the only distinction. It's the same silicon, it's just the speed at which it can run. So in the early days of overclocking, like 10 years ago, it was discovered, for instance, there was a particular Celeron that you could double the speed of, and it would run reliably because they were all bin sorted at a lower speed than they really were. So I guess that's still around a little bit, but cooling becomes the issue. You have to overclock, you're going to turn the clock speed up on the BIOS, and then you're going to probably want to turn the voltage up a little bit to support it. And then the chip is going to start getting hotter and hotter, and then it gets unreliable. So there's a point beyond which you can't go. But if you're not getting unusual crashes, if you're not getting anything weird, and you're getting, and you know, how much, you said what, how many, a few percentage points faster?
Yeah, 16%.
Yeah, that's not a huge amount.
Plus, it stacked on top of the BIOS upgrade or overclock, which was 4%, so it's like 20%.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah, I thought so, but I'm not damaging the chip in it at all.
Well, you can. It can get overheated, but usually it'll crash before it gets burned. So generally what overclockers do is they invest in better cooling, which of course means that they've spent more money to get the chip to run faster. But, you know, sometimes they even use liquid cooling in cases like that.
Right. It's not getting over like 50 Celsius. So.
Yeah. 50 is pretty hot, but probably not hotter than it's rated for. So as long as you're, it's, yeah, you're, so that's good. You're watching the temperature, and it's been reliable. That's awesome. AI tweaker.
Yeah, it's an AI suite. It comes with the Asus motherboard.
Yeah, the A stands for Asus, and the reason that you know Asus distributes that is because they want you to. They're proud of the fact that their motherboards can support that. A lot of chips are clock locked. I haven't really looked into the overclocking seen lately, so I don't know what's going on, if Intel is discouraging it or not, but I do notice that more people are doing this, so I have a feeling Intel is now shipping unlocked chips. What they did for a while is, because they didn't want people to buy these cheaper chips and run them at a higher speed, is they would clock lock them, and that would stop you from doing it. So I don't think that's too bad. As long as you don't go over 60 Celsius, I think you're okay. That's pretty cool. Pretty cool. Pretty sweet. Mel, Eagle River, Alaska. Hello, Mel.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I have a question. My wife is having a few issues with her Kindle Paperwhite, and her birthday's coming up on Friday, and she said she'd like to have something new.
Yeah.
I think that in today's market, she probably needs a tablet that will do a couple of different functions rather than read.
So I'd be a little careful about that, because the Kindle, you know, the Paperwhite and the traditional Kindle, because they're e-ink screens, they're a little easier to read than a tablet. They're not as bright. They're crisper text, and some people really prefer to read on a Kindle. Having said that, people aren't buying them very much. The number of e-readers in use has dropped dramatically because, as you say, you can go out and get an iPad and get all this additional functionality, put the Kindle app on it, and, you know, you've got all the reading, too. So
that may be related to one of my other questions, is that I do know that one or two of these Kindles have a blue shade, I think they call
it. Yes. Now, let's talk about that, because this is a big deal lately, and I'm not convinced, but I'll talk about what the research says when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, ask Leo. Talking high tech, talking computers. We were talking with Mel from Eagle River, Alaska. He's a good husband. Wants to give his wife a new reader. She has a Paperwhite, which I really like. And by the way, I think that Amazon updated that Paperwhite recently. I have a couple of Kindles. I do like reading on them, but they're a little slow. And once you get used to a tablet, if the tablet doesn't bother you, they're so much more functional. But you raise a very interesting question, which is this blue light issue. Now, it sounds a little faddish to me, but it also makes sense. What is daylight? Daylight is bluish. Nighttime incandescent light's a little yellow. Turns out, according to researchers, when our eyes see blue light, our bodies go, "Wake up! It's daytime! Get on out there! Plow the fields! Go hunting for berries!" Whatever it is we do. And so these researchers have concluded, and there has been research to back this up, that the blue light coming from our electronics at night is impeding our getting, you know, interfering with our sleep. And so some people are recommending that we either wear blue blockers at night. Of course, the best recommendation is stop using these devices. It is one of the advantages of the Kindle, the e-ink Kindles, is there's no blue light. You know, the Paperwhite has its own LED light from behind. It does look bluish to me, but I think it's not blue light. Certainly the reflective Kindles would just reflect whatever color your lamp is. In most cases, that's incandescent, which is not blue, but yellow. However, it's interesting because the next version of iOS, Apple's operating system, is going to have something called Night Shift, which eliminates the blue light from the screen. You can set it for how yellow you want it to be. You can have it automatically do it at sunset, turn it off at sunrise. There's a lot of interesting features. That's going to be coming out probably in the next few months. There's a program called F.Lux for Android, does the same thing. I've used it. I think part of the problem is really what's waking you up is the brain stimulus from using your tablet. But if your wife reads at night in bed, reading is normally, I fall asleep the minute I open the book. It's normally a very relaxing occupation. You wouldn't want the blue light to reverse that. So I can see that you might want to do that. If you do, then the good news is either an Android or an iOS tablet, that capability it exists now in Android and it will exist in iOS. So you don't need to buy any special hardware. You still there?
If you are going to an iProduct, which everything we have now is Apple, how would you compare the Mini 4 to, like, the Air 2?
I love the Mini 4. You know, of course, the only difference is the size of the screen. Actually, the Mini 4 is as fast as the current Air. I don't remember what the numbers are. Apple's really confused the heck out of me. But the newest Mini is as fast as the newest Air. So it's really just a screen size difference. And she's used to a very small screen. The Paperwhite is smaller even than the Mini. I love the Mini. I think it's great for reading in bed because it's not as big and heavy as the Air. So it's easier to read. And if she's coming from a Kindle, I think she probably would prefer a Mini. But I can't promise. I also have an iPad Pro, which is ginormous. I don't think anybody's going to read in bed with the iPad Pro. I think the risk of clonking yourself on the head when you fall asleep is high. This thing is huge. On the other hand, I think a Mini or a Air, either would be good. It depends on her eyesight and, you know, her personal preference. You're trying to do this as a gift, so you don't want to ask her. Is that right? Yeah. I love the Mini 4. You know, you can always return it. She can always go back to the Apple Store. I don't know. Is there an Apple Store in Eagle River? Probably not.
Oh, there is. In Anchorage.
In Anchorage. Oh, good. And you're close enough?
A few miles from Anchorage.
Yeah, just you get on the snow cat and you come on in.
Absolutely. Got to avoid the earthquakes like we had
last. I heard you had an earthquake. Yeah. Did you feel it?
I've ever been 15 years.
Holy cow.
It was 7.1.
That is a very big earthquake.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was.
Everybody okay?
Oh, yeah. I think it knocked some things off a shelf.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody was hurt.
7.1 is massive.
It is big.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you're okay. That's, by the way, worse than blue light for waking you up.
Right.
Earthquake really doesn't help your sleep at all. Fortunately, they're rare. Yeah, I think, you know what? I think she would. The iPad Mini 4 is a jewel. I love it. When I saw it, I jumped. I bought it immediately. If you want to be a really good husband, get it in gold. Does she like gold? The gold color is beautiful. And get 128 gigs of storage, and she could put, you know, audiobooks in there too. The good news is the Kindle books are tiny. But she's going to, you know, she'll start playing some games. I think she'll like it.
Well, and we travel a fair amount, and so...
Perfect for travel.
The other thing was that we can... I don't have to take the MacBook Pro.
Right.
Take something smaller when we want to access the internet, yep. Travel.
I travel with my Mini, actually. It's so small, it's not a big deal. I might even bring a laptop and my Mini. It's just so easy just to pop it in a briefcase. And, she'll love it. You know what? She will love it. If you think she might not, don't get it monogrammed. Apple will allow you monogramming. And then they're very good about, you know, you just say, oh, no, it's too small. We want the Air. They'll trade it for you. But I think you know what? Coming from a Paperwhite, you don't want to go to the Air. It'll feel too big.
Good.
Yeah, that's a nice gift. That's a great gift.
Yeah.
That's the modern diamond earrings.
Yeah. The Air is a little cheaper.
Don't tell her that.
Yeah.
She doesn't.
Well, our 50th anniversary is coming up.
Oh, my goodness.
August, so maybe something expensive.
Oh, yeah, save that. What is the 50th? What material?
I think it's gold, isn't it?
Ooh, the golden anniversary. Yeah, sure, that makes sense.
I think that's right.
That's why you get her a gold iPad Mini Air.
Good thought.
Honey, I got it for our anniversary. Hey, congratulations. That's wonderful. I think you're a great husband. That's how you get 50 years. You plan out a gift like that. That's a nice gift. I love the iPad Mini. I feel like it's just a jewel. It's just a perfect size. Really, really, really sweet. You don't have to worry about diamonds for another 25 years. Dan is on the line from Jacksonville, Illinois. Hello, Dan.
Oh, hello, Leo. How are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Oh, good. I got cut off somehow or another.
I picked you up and I didn't hear anything, but I'm glad we got you back on. That's great.
Well, yeah. No, I just recently upgraded to the Note 5, which we both love very
love
much.
Love it.
And I had S4s before, my wife and I did. So anyway, my friend, which broke his phone, and we have Sprint, and he has AT&T. So I told him, I said, well, here, you can use my old phone. And so, but how do we get to switch it over to AT&T, or is that even possible?
He'll have a SIM card in his old broken phone. Have him take the SIM card out of that phone.
Right.
It may or may not work. You said you had an S4?
An S4.
Yeah, that may be too old. Modern Sprint phones use LTE, and so you could put an AT&T card in that SIM slot, and it should work. You could try it if there's a SIM slot on it. If not, you'll have to get a newer phone. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, this used to be an issue. You know, you had to say, well, is it CDMA, which is, of course, the technology used by Sprint and Verizon, or is it GSM, which was the technology used by AT&T and T-Mobile? But that's all kind of muddied now because everybody's using LTE. Instead of CDMA or GSM, they're all LTE, which means they're really essentially all the same. So if you have a phone from Sprint or Verizon that uses an LTE SIM card, chances are good you can bring it to a GSM carrier, what used to be a GSM carrier, AT&T or T-Mobile, and pop their SIM in, and it should work. You won't know till you try it. And I'm thinking the S4 didn't even have on Sprint, probably didn't have a SIM card because I think it's old enough. You know, that's now two generations old. I don't know. It's right in that middle ground where they were starting to do this. But my sense is you could do it with an S5, you could do it with an S6, but you probably couldn't do it with an S4. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I love her. Yeah, I love her. 8888, ask Leo. That's the phone number. Nathan Staton, musical director, spinning the discs, as always, and doing a great job. 888-827-5536. Let's see who we have on the horn right now. Let's go to Wisconsin. Al is on the line. You got to be laughing at all those folks in Washington, D.C. who don't know what to do with snow. Al's the expert. Hi, AJ. Al. AJ, sorry. Hi, AJ.
Hey, morning. How you doing out there?
I am well. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing just fine. Listen, I don't want to bore you. I know you're super busy, but I have been watching and following you for like 20-some years. I got more gray hair than you have.
You know, I was just talking to my wife this morning, and I said, honey, do you know that this year will be my 40th year in broadcasting?
Ouch.
And then, because the next thing I thought is, dang, I'm old.
You shouldn't admit to that. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you've been following me for 20, so that's pretty good.
Yeah.
I remember when I was starting out and I'd read all these job listings for DJs and said, oh, you must have 3 to 5 years experience. And I thought, oh, golly, I'll never have that. That was a while ago.
That's for sure. Hey, listen, I got a couple quick, easy questions. You know, the people here in Milwaukee who supposedly know what they're talking about when it comes to computers, you kind of wonder who's tying their shoes in the morning. How many tuners actually can I use in Windows 7 for the Windows Media Player?
Oh, I have no idea. How many tuners? So you have a TV tuner card, and you put it in your, and you're using Windows Media Center.
Right, in Windows 7 Pro. I actually am using the Home Run system.
Love that Home Run system from Silicon Dust. Yeah, that's a great solution.
Very sweet, yeah. I wanted to, I got a couple other USB tuners, and I like to record a lot of stuff for the kids, a lot of educational as well as Christian stuff, and I wanted to maybe see if I can add a couple tuners, other tuners in.
You got me. Those folks in Milwaukee, I don't know anything either. Let me see. Oh, I'm wearing loafers, so they don't have to worry about tying my shoes.
I'll check the chat network.
Here's what Mike B., who is our guru in all this, says. If it supports an S cable card, because you do need a cable card. Are you going to do it off cable? No, you're using Home Run, which means it's over the air, right?
Yeah, free TV. Where I'm at right now, I get like 40-some channels free over the air.
Actually, Mike corrected himself. It's not an S, it's an M, which means, I think it means a two-way cable card. He says 6 tuners per card, but that's not the question you're asking. Is you're asking Windows Media Center, does it have a limit on the number of channels it can tune in? I bet it's not really, it's a hardware limit more than a software limit. But let's ask the chat room, because I don't know. I've never tried it. And by the way, you better not upgrade your Windows, because as you probably know by now, if you install Windows 10, Windows Media Center goes away.
Right. Yeah, I know that. I've been watching you about that. I've been patiently waiting for Microsoft to offer something. But, you know.
Yeah. You know what? I think they decided they don't want to deal with Hollywood. And as a result, what they're doing is they're saying, hey, we have a media solution. It's called our Xbox.
Right. Yeah.
And, you want it on your computer? That's not what computers do. Because Hollywood doesn't really want you to be able to record video on your computer, because they're afraid what you're going to do is, you know, sell it.
Right. I hear you. Okay, my next question is, how many, if I got multiple hard drives on my system, the more hard drives, will it slow down the computer?
Or no.
Does it work that way?
No, it doesn't work that way.
Excellent.
Hard drives do not use processor power. They use DMA to send the data out, which means the processor is not involved, which means the more it's, you can have as many as you've got room on your bus for. As many seats there is in the bus. Look at this. Answers.microsoft.com. The chat room once again to the rescue. Thank you, Raymond J. Toth. He's been good on the links. The answer is 4 digital and 4 analog tuners. The analog tuners must have hardware MPEG encoding. Holy cow. 4 and 4. Also recommended that you visit the Windows Expert Community. It's an official Microsoft community for help with Windows Media Center. Unless they've shut it down. You know, Microsoft admitted they hadn't updated Media Center since 2009. It's been 7 years since they updated it. And they said, according to our telemetry, maybe you didn't know this, although it's been in the news lately, Microsoft sends back to the home office when people run programs and do stuff. You have to give it permission, but most people do. So they have a pretty good idea of who's using what on Windows. According to our telemetry, Very few people ever launch Windows Media Center, and most of the time they do it by accident and close it immediately. So Microsoft decided, well, since 2009, not to update Windows Media Center, and they've really signaled strongly they plan to kill it, and now they did. Now it's gone. Not only is it gone, you don't get it with Windows 10, but if Windows 10 sees it, it will delete it. So there are other solutions out there. According to this, 4Analog and 4Digital. And since you're doing the Silicon Dust home run, I think you probably are using, it's probably digital by the time it gets to your computer, which means 4Tuners. That should be enough for everyone. Well, most people, although remember Hugh Hefner, the founder and publisher of Playboy, the Playboy Mansion. He was a guy, you know, in the old days, this was the cutting edge guy. He had all the stuff. He apparently had in his basement a bunch of video technicians who would record, this was in the day of videotape, every channel in case Mr. Hefner wanted to watch something. And then this was an early personal video on demand system. They had VCRs tuned to every channel, and we just record everything. Take out a tape, put in a new tape, take out a tape, put in. And if Mr. Hefner ever wanted to watch anything, he'd just call down to the basement, and he'd say, I'm coming in the mood for Hawaii 5-0. Put the last episode on. This is before a DVR. And it was a lot more expensive and probably didn't even look as good. I doubt he was watching much TV anyway. Chris in Miami, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Well, I'm good, but we were expecting you here. You're coming in on the Anthem of the Seas. Come to Miami. Contact Chris. Get a free.
I didn't have time. I wasn't in Miami. I was at Port Canaveral, Cape Canaveral.
Oh, why?
I didn't have time. Huh? That's where they go. That's where the boat goes. The boat goes there. It docks. You get off the boat. You take a bus. That's what it does. You look outside. You see the rocket ships there. I don't know why I talk to you
really
like this.
Italian on me.
Yeah, but yeah, I don't know what happened there.
But let me do this.
Forget about it. I'm not coming to Miami.
Yeah, but I'm not going to forget about it.
Forget
you know what?
About,
if you come here,
yeah.
If you come here.
Yeah.
I'm serious, because you know, you've done a lot, and I feel the need to give back to you in some way. But
would you take me out for some gabagool, a little mozzarella? Well, yeah. Will you do that?
We got Italian. If you don't want pie, we got Italian.
I'll go out for a nice tomato pie.
Hey, it's okay. It's the situation. You know what I mean?
Every time you call, I go into this. I don't know why.
Well, it's better than Whole Foods Market.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but whenever you come here, meals on the house.
Thank you. What are we going to have?
Whatever you want.
Whatever I want.
Whatever you want.
You got some good restaurants in Miami, right?
There is, but I said the Thai restaurant, Sushi Siam. You can look up Sushi Siam because my partner, he's a chef there. You can get the whole meal for free.
Deal. I love Thai food.
Yeah. We'll pay for the whole thing for you.
I love. Deal.
Yeah.
That's your cheapskate. That's cheap food.
I respect you.
Okay.
Know, yeah.
Go ahead.
But we also got good Italian. I mean, Miami, we got anything you want. But, I mean, here, where you want to go, I can take care of you.
Did you have a question? Because I got 10 seconds left.
Yeah. I wanted to know, I have a late 2009 iMac, and I wanted to know that the processor, I guess, has been working good. We're going to get a new iMac, but is it possible to replace the processor in a late 2009?
No, forget about it. You can't. It's soldered in. There's nothing you can do. You can't just take it out and put a new one in. What are you, crazy? No, you can't. Sorry. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey. Forget about it. What?
This is
whose tablets crashed?
The Patriots Microsoft Surface tablets.
Yeah, you go Denver. Because the Patriots do that to every team that comes to Foxborough.
Oh, I don't think Denver did it. It's a Microsoft Surface.
No. Every team that goes to Foxborough, suddenly the radio goes. And the tablet, no, this happens, they're such cheaters. This happens all the time. And the tablets go down, I swear to God. This is the Broncos going, yeah, I can do that. We can do that.
We have a switch.
Oh, your tablet went down. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
No, that's to Belichick. That's a little up yours to a Belichick. That's what that is. That's not a Microsoft problem. That's funny, though. So they all just crashed, huh?
Well, there's a lot of new
If they crashed for the Broncos as well as the Patriots.
Yeah. No, people are saying Broncos advantage. Two Broncos advantage.
Yeah.
I put a couple of links to the story.
Did you?
In the Twitter.
We'll talk about it on Twitter.
Yeah.
That's funny. No, that's you know, the Patriots do that all the time. It's a response to the Patriots.
I know.
Yeah, they could be using this piece of junk. Jeez. Jeez Louise. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, so early in the show. Remember Judy called. She was trying to edit her photos. They were turning black. I said, you know, it turns out if you press Control and Option when you launch Apple's Photos app, you'll rebuild the library. I did it to mine. It makes it beautiful. My library didn't used to load. It loads now. So that works. That's actually a good tip to know. Apple's Photos leaves a little bit desired. You know, I have to say, Microsoft lately leaves a little bit desired, too. Did you hear during the football game that's maybe going on right now? Maybe not. I don't know. Don't go watch it, please. That the Microsoft tablets, on-field tablets, the ones that they're required to use because the NFL made a deal with Microsoft to replace the iPads they were using with Surface tablets, they all went down. I smell shenanigans. I think that doesn't make any sense. 8888 Ask Leo. Let's take a few more calls, then we're going to wrap it up for the week. Andrew in Erie, PA.
Erie, Pennsylvania, that's it. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. I know Erie. We have a family plot there. I may be buried in Erie.
Well, I hope I don't come visit you there.
Come visit. Would you visit my grave if I am? Please.
I'll try and bring
My mother tells me this. She says, you know, nobody in the family lives in Pennsylvania anymore. But she says, you know, we do have a family plot there.
Oh, my. So, yeah, I know we're getting close to the top of the hour, so I'll try and be quick.
Yes, I'm sorry. I'm slowing you down. Go ahead.
No, it's fine. But one quick thing, I know a lot of people talk about going back to the tech TV days.
Oh, yeah.
How about the ZD TV days back on Galaxy?
Yeah. Now you are an old-timer.
No, I'm only 33. I'm not 33.
When we started in 1998, our 20th anniversary is coming up in a couple of years. In 1998... we started as ZDTV, but they realized very quickly that that was a terrible name for a tech channel because we'd call up people and say, hey, I'm calling from ZDTV. They said, what is that, a pasta channel? What is that? What is ZDTV? So when Paul Allen bought it in 2001, they said, we're going to change the name to Tech TV. I think people will understand it a little bit better.
Yeah, but then Comcast ruined it for that.
And Comcast bought it. They just trashed it. It's gone. Yeah. But I live on.
That's what's important. Here to help.
Thank you. I love doing this. You know, I don't know what I'd do if I couldn't do this. Really, I'd probably. You know, I was thinking, what if I won the Powerball and I'd still come to work every day?
Yeah.
I love this.
Did I have something to do?
Yeah.
So quick question then. I'm thinking about adding an SSD to my laptop. I'm gonna pull the optical drive to the drive bay.
Yeah, so some laptops you could do that. If you have a hard drive, but you also have a DVD or a player, in some cases you can buy usually it's a Mac, MacSales.com, Otherworld Computing sells these. I did it. You could take out your DVD drive, because who needs that anymore?
Right.
And they have an enclosure for an SSD. You put an SSD in there.
Mm-hmm.
Then, yeah, you got two drives.
So I'm thinking about, there's a couple I'm looking at, either Samsung, Crucial, SanDisk. I'm not sure which one I'm going to get yet.
Is this for a Mac?
No, it's a Windows.
Windows. So is somebody making the enclosure? Because that's the key.
Well, no. There's one I found on Amazon for about $20.
Good. Yeah, you need an enclosure, because what happens is, of course, you can't just put the hard drive where the DVD player is. It's not the same shape and size. It'll just rattle around.
Right.
So you need something that is the same shape and size as the DVD enclosure was, and it has a place to put the SSD, the solid state drive. Yeah.
So once I do that, I'm trying to think if there's an easy way just to be able to migrate the info that's on my current internal platter.
Well, you're not replacing the current platter, right?
No.
But you feel like the new SSD will be so fast you want to run the operating system and the app.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's actually my advice, is the SSD storage is still more expensive than spinning storage, so you tend to get smaller drives. So put Windows on it, put your applications on it. Those things will benefit. your data drive doesn't have to be that fast. So you want to kind of almost do a swap.
Yeah, I mean, it's a 1 terabyte internal, so I'm going to have to kind of petition it off and move things back and forth so I can get the drive, or get the drive I want onto the SSD to a respectable size. And then I want to migrate that partition over to the SSD. I just want to know if there's any good software solutions to do that.
Yeah, when you buy a new hard drive, this is in the days of spinning drives, but Western Digital, Seagate, Hitachi, IBM would all sell, would all offer a free download. Mm-hmm. That was a drive copy utility. It would do a sector.
I remember those days.
Yeah, I think you could probably still get it from Western Digital. Hitachi got sold, and IBM got sold, and Western Digital is still standing. I don't know who owns Seagate, but I think Western Digital or Seagate, they may still have that download. That was basically a dumb sector copier, which should still work, which is copy sector one from the old drive to sector one from the new drive, and don't pay attention to what's there. Just copy it all, the master boot record and everything. And then you'll need to tell when your BIOS to boot to the new drive, not the old drive. That may be more tricky.
Okay. Oh, I'm also looking in the chat room right now, and I see Cablehead that said that the Samsung SSDs come with migration software. So
yeah. Yeah, there you go. So, but I mean, I'm Samsung, and by the way, the Samsung EVO is really the one to get.
Yeah, I was thinking between the EVO,
Everybody seems to agree that the EVO, either the old 950 or the new 960, is the best SSD out there.
Oh, okay, even better than the 850, okay.
Yeah, they've got a 950 now.
Okay.
That seems to be the widely held belief. So, okay. I don't know. Anything that you put in there is going to be so fast, so much better. Ideally what you would do is, I don't know. I guess what'll happen is when you go to the boot manager, it'll show two drives. I don't know. That's an interesting question. How does the second drive show up on a machine that never had a second drive? I presume the boot manager will say, oh, you have two drives. Which one do you want to boot from?
Well, yeah. It probably won't see the CD drive anymore and then just say, hey, there's another hard drive here.
Yeah. By the way, since you're in the chat room, you see Marsworm's post there. EaseUS is a great company, EaseUS.com. They have a guide for their partition manager, which is free.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Migrate OS to SSD. See, you're not alone. You're not the only one doing this.
Right. Okay.
So there you go.
I will definitely check that out as well.
Thanks. Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Thanks for the kind words, too. I think I have time for one more. Why not? What do you think? Let's do it, Kim. Debbie in Calabasas, California. Hi, Debbie.
Hi, Leo. Thank you so much for taking my call. So I've read on your, I went to your website and looked at different reasons for spamming and or spoofing. And what happened with my Gmail account is I keep getting things back, bounce back saying from people that they can't open the attachments.
Except. Yeah, that's fairly common.
Right.
And that's because spammers don't want to use their address because you could track them down. You could hunt them down like the dogs that they are.
I wish.
So what they do, you know, the way a spammer works is they get a mailing list. They buy it. Might have a million names on it. They use special software that reads that mailing list and takes any one at random, any address from that mailing list, and puts it in as the sender's address. Good news. You won the lottery.
Yeah.
You should go out and buy a Powerball ticket because you're a very lucky person. Unfortunately, there's nothing you could do about it because the way email is set up, there's no sender verification system.
Right.
Anybody can spoof anybody else.
Okay, changed passwords.
No, nobody's got into your account, though. That's not the problem. It's not. They don't have to have your account. They just need to know your email address. And they don't even need to know it. They just put some email address in it. You just happen to be the one. It could have been made up.
Okay.
But it will change because they never stay at the same place for very long. So these will go away eventually.
Okay.
Right now, what you should do is set up a Gmail filter that when you get the subject line, you know, mail, it's, they're probably fairly similar, like mail returned, no sender, whatever
right,
it is.
Right.
When you get, just have that go, just go to the trash or,
oh, archive. It's spam. Okay.
Yeah. Then you'll never see it.
Okay. All right. Oh, I changed my last password. And email.
You thought you got hacked.
Yeah, exactly. And I thought, I better be on the safe side. And
well, that's
sure.
Hey,
and then I had friends who I had been mailed by me then started texting me saying, "Hey, I'm getting this. Is this spam?"
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So that's unusual. They didn't pretend to be you in the email, did they?
Yeah.
Oh, they did?
Yeah.
Okay, that's a different matter. So we all get a certain amount of bounce backs because people use our email address. But if in the body of the email says something like, Hi, this is Debbie.
Yeah.
Would you send me some money?
Not quite that, but something.
So that is a scam. Yeah. It means they did hack your Gmail, and you're very smart to change the password.
Okay.
At the bottom of your Gmail page, I mentioned this before, there's something that says details. That shows who's logging in to your Gmail account. Now that you've changed the password, chances are good they're gone. But check that once in a while. Make sure those logins are yours. Remember, though, it may look like you're logging in from New Jersey, but that's just your cell phone, things like that. But that's a good thing to check. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And as long as I got you, I ran out of time. But turn on two-factor authentication as well, Debbie. That is a very useful thing to have on Gmail. It's a little bit more of a pain. Do it with LastPass as well. You know what two-factor is, right?
Well, that's when I have the phone and I can use my phone to have a text from them.
Yeah.
Yes, and I did that recently with LastPass, and I had done that also with Gmail. And
really? Because it's very hard to hack somebody if that's turned on.
Yeah, not to log in every time. I stay logged in.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
So then it's possible if you left your computer lying around, like you were at the library and you went to the bathroom, somebody sat down at your computer.
No. I'm at home and I very rarely use my laptop.
If you have two-factor turned on,
mm-hmm.
virtually impossible for somebody to hack into your account.
Okay.
So that worries me because now I'm wondering how this happened. But if you didn't have Gmail's two-factor turned on before.
I didn't.
Okay. You got it on now.
Okay. Yes.
Good. You're safe.
Okay. Okay.
That will make this will never happen again.
Okay.
Simple fix.
Okay. Okay. Good. All right. So now.
You're lucky because sometimes when people. So there's two different ways people do this. They didn't want you to know.
Mm-hmm.
So, because otherwise they would have changed your password, and they would have changed the recovery phone number. Make sure you have a recovery phone number because you can actually, and they would have changed all that so you couldn't get it back. But they didn't want you to know, and that's lucky because they didn't change anything.
Right.
So you were able to recover your account to get it back.
Yes, because I was able to change my password,
you're golden. And now they're locked out. They're going to go somewhere else.
Okay. Okay. Good. All right. Well, thank you. I so appreciate that. Yeah, no, I feel relieved because I was like, okay, well, I didn't even want to send out any additional emails because I wasn't sure if they were getting my emails to my new... And I don't do a lot of confidential anything on emails. I'm always careful about that anyway, but I still don't want my emails going out to anybody else.
No, you're right because password recovery is sent to that email address.
Yeah.
So they can to get into other stuff by saying, oh, I forgot my password. Send it to me.
Right.
So you don't want anybody in your email.
Right.
So this is good. Two-factor, make sure you have a recovery phone number. That way, if they had changed the password, you could still say to Google, my password, I forgot it, or it's been changed, and they would call you.
Right.
So all of those things are important. You're secure now. I mean, there are still ways, but they would have to get to the phone company, or they'd have to steal your phone. It's a lot harder.
Yeah.
For practical purposes, you're unhackable now.
Okay. Excellent. Because I actually, the first thing that I noticed was it was something from AT&T, and I don't have an AT&T account for at the house.
Good for you. You're smart. You caught it. That's good.
And so I went onto my house phone, looked up the phone number, and said, gee, this is not me. They actually had a physical address for somebody, and it had my name on it, first and last, not just first.
Oh, yeah. Just check your credit cards now, your PayPal account.
Yeah,
okay. They're up to. They're trying to. What they're trying to do is buy stuff.
Okay,
that's why they put an address in there. So you make sure that nobody's charging things to you.
Okay, excellent.
Okay,
again.
I think you got it in time. Good.
Okay.
Good job.
Okay. Right. Thanks so much.
Sure. Take care, Debbie. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here, and don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security and security now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. I'll see you next time.